This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day. It's the start of the start of a new way. It's the start of the end of the old way.
Good morning. Up to 40% still not working, according to the Director of Labor. 59 cases of COVID between Thursday and Saturday alone. A weekend junk in Russia defying the emergency order. And in our interview, we are talking with Dr. Nakia Forbes about what that slight uptick in COVID numbers means. Plus, it's day one for Morning Blend Business. It's all straight ahead this morning. I'm Dwight Strawn, and this is Morning Blend.
It's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day. It's the start of the start of a new way. It's the start of the end of the old way. Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day.
Good morning again, Bahamas. It is Monday, February 15th, 2021. This is Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Again, I'm Dwight Strawn. In a moment, Pamela Musgrove will be joining us. Also this morning, we're talking with Alive about their postpaid plans. And later, Morning Blend business premieres. Financial Secretary Marlon Johnson will be our very first guest, and we're talking about the state of the economy. But first, it's time for The Overnight, the latest breaking news from while we're sleeping, and the top national and international headlines this morning. In the overnight, Director of Labor John Pinder is saying 40% of Bahamians and residents are still not working amid the COVID-19 pandemic. He says there are two different statistics that we need to look at. He says the Department of Labor is not the official government agency that deals with stats. But he's saying that 30 to 40% of people who find themselves not working at this time, and not working means that some of them are furloughed. He says that doesn't mean they are unemployed, and that these are the people who depend on the tourism industry. Pinder says the unemployment rate is likely teetering between 26 and 28%. In December 2019, the unemployment rate stood at 10.7%, according to the Department of Statistics. However, as the tourism industry and eventually the country came to a standstill due to the pandemic, unemployment numbers swiftly rose with widespread layoffs. Last week, Labor Minister Dion Fogg said that since the pandemic started, that he was confident that there has been an increase in the unemployment rate. He said, quote, everything was on a standstill and most businesses put their workers on temporary layoffs. That has now changed. Pinder yesterday saying that he would not use drastically down as folks had done, but he says there are some good signs in terms of employment. Pinder says the Cove at Atlantis had 75 to 80% occupancy over the weekend. As a result, according to the director, the resort was able to call more employees back to work. A court has awarded a Bahamian man who was unlawfully detained at the Department of Correctional Services for 6 months $189,500 plus legal costs. Dexter Davis was charged with attempted murder on January 23, 2015 and remanded into custody. The case was sent to the Supreme Court by voluntary bill. of indictment. On July 15, 2015, Senior Justice Estelle Gray Evans quashed the indictment after finding that the charge sheet was invalid because it had not been signed in compliance with the provisions of the Criminal Procedure Code. As a result, Gray Evans and Davis's said that Davis's subsequent remand was invalid. She ordered his release from custody and compensatory damages. Police later rearrested Davis and filed a new attempted murder charge against him. He was acquitted on February 16, 2016 in the Supreme Court when a complainant took the witness stand and said he didn't want to pursue the case. Davis's lawyer sought $895,000 in damages. However, the Crown said Davis's detention was unlawful due to technicality, and he was awarded $24,000. More about this story in today's Nassau Guardian. 59 COVID-19 cases confirmed in the country between Thursday and Saturday, according to the Ministry of Health. 21 of those were confirmed on Thursday alone, 27 on Friday, and another 11 on Saturday. Of the new cases, 49 here in New Providence, 6 on Grand Bahama, 2 in Abaco, 1 on Andros, and 1 in Luthra. The cases bring the total confirmed in the country since the start of the pandemic to 8,370. Since February, 163 cases have been confirmed. On Friday, it was also confirmed that the February 4th death of a New Providence woman was COVID-related, bringing the death toll to 179. 38 people were confirmed to have died with COVID-19, but not because of it, and another 15 deaths were still under investigation. And despite being denied permission to hold a junk new rush out during a funeral or on Saturday for longtime Valley Boys member Stanford Big Jew Outen, participants still attempted to go ahead and do that rush out. The day before, hundreds showed up outside St. Joseph's Catholic Church along Boyd Road for a junk new rush out at the graveside funeral of Willis Kool-Aid Bain, a longstanding member of the Saxons. On Friday night, a day before Outen's funeral, a rush out was held in his honor. Videos of that rush out were widely circulated on Facebook. When contacted yesterday, the Office of the Prime Minister said it did not grant special permission to any junket groups to hold the rush outs over the weekend. And as of today, vessels and people departing Haiti are prohibited from entering the Bahamas for 21 days. The ban, which was imposed by the Prime Minister in the latest emergency order released on Saturday, will apply to people traveling directly from Haiti or transiting through another jurisdiction. Foreign Affairs Minister Darren Henfield telling the Nassau Guardian the ban was imposed in response to Haiti's carnival, which started yesterday. Overseas, the Czech government has redeclared a state of emergency for the next 2 weeks to tackle the coronavirus pandemic in one of the European Union's hardest hit nations. The decision coming in defiance of the lower house of parliament, which has refused the minority government's request to extend the powerful tool that gives the cabinet the extra powers needed to impose nationwide restrictions and limit people's travel and rights. The Czech Republic, a nation of 10.7 million, has had more than 1 million confirmed cases, with 18,143 deaths. According to the European Center for Disease Prevention and Control, its rate of 915 new cases per 100,000 people in the past 2 weeks is the second worst per capita in the 27-nation EU after Portugal. And from Spain, the pro-Union Socialist Party claiming a narrow win in regional elections in Catalonia late Sunday, but the bloc of parties supporting secession by Spain's northeastern corner has widened their control of the regional parliament. With 99% of the votes counted, the three main parties pledging to carve out an independent Catalan state increased their number of seats in the regional parliament to 74. In 2017, those same parties won 70 seats of the 135-seat chamber, just two above the majority. The Socialist Party, led by former Health Minister Salvador Illa, was poised to take 33 seats with over 625,000 votes. The pro-secession Republican Left of Catalonia was also set to claim 33 seats, but with 580,000 votes. The outcome confirming that pro-separatist sentiment has not waned despite the collective suffering of the COVID-19 pandemic and a frustrated secession bid in October 2017 that left several of its members in prison. In sports, much like she did in the 200 meters last month, the Hayman Sprint superstar Shawnee Miller-Uibo cruising to victory in the 400 meters over the weekend, setting a new Bahamian national record indoors, a new North American, Central American, and Caribbean Athletic Association record, and tying for the eighth fastest of all time in an event she hadn't run in 7 years. 26-year-old Miller-Uibo continuing to rack up the national honors and move up the world's all-time list, running a stunning 50.21 seconds at the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix meet on Staten Island, New York on Saturday. A trio of Americans followed Miller-Uibo to the finish line. On posting the world lead on Saturday, Miller-Uibo said she feels great about the race, just wishing that she had attacked with a better start. You can read more about how she did in today's Guardian Sports section. And it's been 11 months since organized baseball has been played in the country due to the arrival of COVID-19. But this past weekend, the Freedom Farm Baseball League ended that hiatus as they hosted an all-star weekend at the Freedom Farm Baseball Complex in Yamacraw. Read more about that in today's Guardian Sports section as well. Overseas from tennis and the Australian Open, Novak Djokovic wore tape above his right hip and winced when he stretched for some shots in a three-hour match against Milos Raonic. That match will go into the records as Djokovic's 300th win at a major. After qualifying for the Australian Open quarterfinals for the 12th time, Djokovic suggesting his injury was serious enough that had it been any tournament other than a Grand Slam, he would have withdrawn from the event. The eight-time Australian Open champion planned to spend most of the next 2 days recovering with physiotherapy and painkillers ahead of his quarterfinal against sixth-seeded Alexander Zverev. U.S. Open finalist Zverev beat number 23-seeded Dusan Lajovic to move into the quarterfinals in back-to-back years. The other quarterfinal match in that half of the draw is one that nobody saw coming, with a straight sets win over third-seeded Dominic Thiem, the U.S. Open champion, Australian Open runner-up in 2020. Grigor Dimitrov advanced to a showdown with Aslan Karatsev. Rafael Nadal will play Italian veteran Fabio Fognini for a place in the Australian Open quarterfinals on day 8. Nadal has been bothered by back stiffness. He's aiming for a men's record 21st major title. That's sports, and that's the overnight. Time for your first look at weather. In your weather for today, we've got a persistent high-pressure ridge that will continue to support mostly dry and stable conditions with brisk winds across the area today. Beachgoers should exercise caution due to the risk of rip currents at East and South Coast beaches. For all areas today, your forecast calls for partly and mostly sunny, breezy, and very warm conditions with a slight chance of a few passing showers, mostly fair and a bit breezy tonight. Smallcraft caution remains in effect for the northwest and central Bahamas, while an advisory continues for the southeast Bahamas. Wind southeast to south at 15 to 20 knots in the northwest and central islands. East to southeast at 15 to 25 knots in the southeastern islands. Seas 4 to 7 feet in the northwest and central Bahamas, but 5 to 8 feet in the southeast Bahamas. Off to a warm start, it is about 75 degrees right now in Nassau. We're looking at highs getting up to a warm 84 Fahrenheit, 29 Celsius. Overnight lows tonight getting back down to a warm 75 Fahrenheit, 24 Celsius. That's your first look at weather this morning. We'll have your extended outlook coming up after traffic in just a bit. You're listening to Morning Blend. When we come back, we're discussing today's top stories right here on Guardian Radio 96.9, your home for fresh news and smart talk all day.
wake up, it's a new day.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Technology serves to make our lives better, so why not your business too? At Custom Computers, we've been maintaining our knowledge and relationships with top tech companies since 1987 and carry only the most trusted brands like Apple, Microsoft, HP, and more. No company has helped more businesses build reliable IT systems than Custom Computers. You name it, we've done it. Call 396-1101 to talk to any of our business experts. Find trust in your tech. Count on Custom Computers.
Digital banking, online, RBC.
RBC banking, online, pay your bills anytime.
RBC digital banking is so easy. Granny and granddad can do it. Sign up for online banking or download the RBC Caribbean app.
With RBC, it's safe and easy. Send your money hassle-free.
RBC.
Visit rbc.com/Caribbean/bank at home. RBC Royal Bank. Banking reimagined.
Roaming just got easier. Say hello to more with our new Liberty Prime plan. With more minutes, more texts, and more data to do the things you love, right here at home and even when you travel. With the all-new Liberty Prime, Liberty Premium, and Liberty Elite, you've got one less worry. Roam again. Alive. Believe in best.
Believe in best.
Don't let your children get left behind. Get them immunized. They need immunizations to protect them from some diseases, to get into school, and to apply for some jobs. Contact your nearest clinic or healthcare provider to make an immunization appointment today. Protect their health and their future. Remember, immunizations are free at all government healthcare facilities. Prevent disease. Immunize, please.
This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day. It's the start of the start of a new way. It's the start of the end of the old way. Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day.
Welcome back to Morning Blend here on Guardian Radio 96.9. We are streaming live on guardiantalkradio.com and on the Guardian Radio app for smart devices. We're also on your televisions on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 and BTC Flow Channel 612. Once again, I'm Dwight Strawn. In a moment, Pamela Musgrove will be joining us. You can join the conversation as well. We are on Twitter. Follow us, please, at Morning Blend 969. And find out more about what we're talking about on the show and the guest that you hear from, the guests that you hear from on the show. That's also on Facebook, facebook.com/morningblend969. You can message us there. Or you can email us, morningblend@nasgard.com. And text us on the Guardian Radio text line, powered by BTC, 422-GR96, 422-4796, standard text rate supply. Coming up this morning, more weather and traffic. And we have business news coming up in Morning Blend Business at 9 a.m. now. So look forward to that. In our 7 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking with Dr. Nakia Forbes about the COVID numbers. We've had 59 cases since Thursday and Saturday, just between that time alone. We're going to find out what's behind that uptick if we can. In our 8 o'clock hour, we'll be talking with our friends at Alive. They have a lot of exciting things going on with their post-paid plans. And as we said, 9 o'clock, we've got Morning Blend Business, and we'll be talking with Financial Secretary Marlon Johnson this morning. But first, It's time to talk about what's in the news. And in the news, we'll talk about COVID in just a bit, and we'll talk about all that junkanoo, all those rush outs over the weekend. What was that all about? We'll get to that in a bit. But we begin with labor, and the director of labor, John Pinder, is saying about 40% of people are still not working. He says many have been furloughed. This is coming after, this is after the minister of labor last week said he believes that most people are back to work. So as we deduced last week when we were having a discussion about the minister's comments, this is mainly semantics here. Take a listen to what John Pinder is saying versus what Dion Folks is saying, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Sorry, Jasper Ward writes about this. Director of Labor John Pinder said yesterday 40% of Bahamians and residents are still not working amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Pinder told the NASA Guardian, quote, "There are two different statistics that we have to look at. The Department of Labor is not the official government agency that deals with the statistics, but I am saying that 30 to 40% is persons who find themselves not working. Not working means that some of them are furloughed. That doesn't mean they are unemployed. These are the people who depend on the tourism industry." That's what we were saying last week. So the minister is saying that most of the people are not unemployed. Okay, they still have jobs, but they haven't worked in almost a year. All right. So now Pinder says the unemployment rate is likely teetering around 26 to 28%. In December 2019, the unemployment rate stood at 10.7%, according to the Department of Statistics. However, as the tourism industry and eventually the country came to a standstill during the pandemic, unemployment numbers swiftly rose with widespread layoffs. As we said last week, Minister of Labor Dion Folks said that since the pandemic started, he was confident, quote, "based on the evidence that we see in the economy, that the unemployment rate has drastically come down. Everything was on a standstill, and most businesses put their workers on temporary layoffs. That has now changed. Most of the people are now back to work." Yesterday, Pinder said that he would not use drastically down, as Folks did, to describe the situation. But he said, quote, "there are good signs. There are signs that the unemployment rate is reducing." Pinder pointed to the Cove in Atlantis that had 75 to 80% occupancy over the weekend. 75 to 80%. As a result, according to the director, the resort was able to call more employees back to work. He described that as an indication that individuals are visiting the Bahamas. He said the country will continue to struggle until it is able to get more airlines to fly to the Bahamas and see the return of the cruise industry. He said, "but we're satisfied that there are some steps being taken to make domestic business more attractive. The Prime Minister has extended Grand Bahamas curfew." I guess that means reduced. Okay. An additional hour. He visited the family islands and is getting good positive reports to which they are able to keep the COVID rate down. So I think as long as we are able to show that we as a country are able to protect ourselves, I believe that domestic tourism is going to be something that we're going to have to depend on for a short period of time. Now, the country recorded its first case back in March last year, shortly after the country was placed on a state of emergency, which we are still in. All right, so that's what Pinder is saying. Still 40%, up to 40% still not working, but those people still have their jobs. They've not been completely terminated. And so the minister, I guess, not incorrect when he says the unemployment rate has come down. All right, what do you make of all of it? Again, we talked about that. It doesn't seem that way. We're asking for more evidence, more than just a feeling, more than just what you look at. But what do you make of what he's saying here? 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Tweet us, Facebook us, text us, 422-4796, 422-4796. Again, standard text rate supply. Right, and why aren't we getting these numbers? We've been saying that twice a year. Surveys, is that good enough? We need to be doing this frequently, especially now, once a month, some type of survey. No, it's not going to be as easy as it would have been before. All the emergency orders and lockdowns and curfews and so forth. But we need to get a better picture of exactly what is happening. It is crucial, wouldn't you say? All right, let's go to the phone lines, and we'll get to your text messages in just a bit. Caller, good morning. You are on the air.
Mr. Strong, good morning. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. Good morning.
And your guest. Mr. Strong, I mean, it is obviously that Jonathan and Dion folks in the same page. I mean, it's obviously them two don't want to talk. I mean, them two ain't communicating because something as serious as, I mean, it's unemployment. You have to come to the public, I mean, with one voice. You don't think so?
I mean, are they saying anything really different?
I mean, just me give you, I mean, in a nutshell, as a word to mine, you know, John Pinder is saying the minister, the Ministry of Labor is not responsible, I mean, for stats. He said it, right?
He's been saying that.
Pardon me?
He's been saying that. He wants that to change when it comes to these labor numbers.
He has tried to say indirectly, the minister speaking out of time. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the minister is responsible, I mean, for policies, right or wrong. Director deals with on the ground. Is that true?
Okay, that's not proving anything different from what they've said,
no,
though.
No, I mean, the fact that Elon folks is just a little lying.
He's not.
Two more things.
Like John Bender is saying, there are two different ways of looking at this, right?
Mr. Strong,
not working is not the same as unemployed.
Mr. Strong, if you're only awake for over a year, what's the risk?
Not working.
You're unemployed. Listen to me. If you're only awake for almost 9 months and you ain't getting paid, what's the risk? Unemployed, right? Pardon me?
You know exactly what they're saying. These people still have their jobs. When everything goes back to normal, right? And so I'm not saying that it's a good situation that we're in, but you get where he's coming from, and unfortunately it is wordplay, it is semantics, right? They're not unemployed, but they're not working. That's not good. That's not good. And it's a terrible situation.
Two more things. Don't stop my clock. One more thing, right? You saw how F&M MPs getting run really over the street, obscene language. I mean, the Bayman people, we ain't getting violent. We have to run them peacefully. You see what happened to run with us on Saturday?
No, I didn't.
Just watch the social media. Another thing, Mr. Strong.
Was that not happening to the PLP back in 2017?
Mr. Strong, I mean, like, let's be careful.
And 5 years before that, I think it was happening to the F&M, too. This is what we do, apparently.
Let me ask you.
Right? And we're still in the same situation, no matter what.
Every government get voted out on the so-called bad deal. So the PLP was voted out of office. That's history. But now these people are getting worse and worse and worse. I mean,
each one seems to be trying to outdo the horribleness of the ones before. I agree with you.
I'm trying to people really telling them. I mean, obscene language. Another thing, right, Mr. Strong. Last but least, right, you see a double standard this coming to 30F. You had a rush out for the Saxon superstars breaking rules left and right. Big Jew Funnel was a motorcade with trucks. No trouble rush out. You see the duplicity this government doing to people in this country where people don't trust them. All in the world, you have the Saxon having jungle raid live everywhere. And the Wally boys, Big Jew, ex-police officer, had just parade through the street and the police harassing people. I mean, are you see what happened right now in this country?
I don't think what you're saying. I don't know. But, okay, well, all of these are crazy, no matter what, right? We're seeing numbers go up over the past few days, and COVID is surging in other parts of the world. So everybody must have lost control of their senses. I don't know if they got hit in the head with a cowbell or something, but this is crazy stuff. And I need to understand why we think we can do this. What is going on, right? All right, so you can message us about the labor situation. But let's talk about that since he brought it up. Well, we're going to get to that anyway. So here we go. The Junkanoo over the weekend. Videos. So these were all different videos that I was getting. So they weren't all the same. Okay. All right. Wow. So despite being denied permission to hold a Junkanoo rush out during a funeral on Saturday for longtime Valley Boys member Stanford Big Jew Outen, participants still attempted to go ahead with the rush out, according to the police commissioner. our Kyle Joaquin writing about this. The day before, hundreds showed up outside St. Joseph's Catholic Church along Boyd Road for a drunken rush out at the graveside funeral of Willis Kool-Aid Bane, a longtime member of the Saxon Superstars. On Friday night, a day before Outen's funeral, a rush out was held in his honor. Videos of that rush out were widely circulated on Facebook as well. All right, so I'm here thinking they're all the same. It was meant three different things. Oh, wow. Okay. When contacted yesterday, the Office of the Prime Minister said it had not granted special permission to any junket groups to hold rush outs over the weekend. In videos shared on social media, crowds of junketers were seen dancing, some wearing costumes, as they gave their farewell to Bane, who has been known as a senior member of the Saxons for years. Additional photos from Bane's graveside funeral showed scores of supporters paying their final respects while others looked on. As his casket was lowered into the earth, a crowded graveside photo showed at least 35 people looking on, many with no masks. In the various videos and pictures shared, there were some participants and spectators wearing masks, while there were many others who did not, as they enjoyed the junket music. On Saturday, hundreds of Valley Boys supporters were turned around outside Woodlawn Gardens after their planned rush out for Outen was shut down by police. When contacted, Roll said, this is Commissioner Roll now, he said, despite being denied permission for the rush out, group members went ahead. He said, quote, there was a funeral and they requested permission to hold a rush out. I denied it and persons insisted that they wanted to have a rush out and so the police broke it up. Scores of police and Defense Force officers were stationed at various checkpoints near Woodlawn Gardens on Soldier Road as the junket rush out proceeded towards the graveyard. So Dave's saying the police were cracking down on the Valley Boys, but the Saxons, no biggie. Oh, okay. Wow. Roll could not say whether anyone was fined or cited. Outen's graveside funeral was semi-military, as he was a former police officer. In one photo, a man driving a truck could be seen being rerouted from the entrance of the graveyard by a police officer. On the back of the truck, a big heart-shaped junketoo piece said, RIP Big Jew. In another photo, drummers could be seen sitting on the sidewalk with drums on the ground. According to Commissioner Roll, the funeral service was held in accordance with the emergency order. And so there was no issue with that. However, he said it was the defiance of the police instructions regarding a rush out that presented the issue. Okay, this is insane. This is all insane that we are having this discussion at this point. Do we think it's February of last year? And even that was because people really believed that COVID was here by then. But why would people explain to me? Pamela Musgrove, maybe you could help me understand this. What is going on here?
Good morning, Dwight. Good morning, Bahamas.
Great to have you with us. Mm-hmm. What is this? Why are people doing this?
I mean, there are people who are going to defy the orders, Dwight. You just have to have the enforcement. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know why we get all worked up. Everywhere you go, when you look around the world, there are people defying orders. You know, I read an article where, you know, they were having a party. It was down in a basement. And when the police got there, there was about 50 persons in the basement having a party. And they served them citations for some, and some they allowed them to go. And the person who had the party, the person who owned the home.
Yeah.
They were fine. So you're going to always find people trying to beat the system,
yeah,
no matter where you go. So you just have to, you must have the enforcement there so that when they do, okay, then you serve them the citations. I think this complaining.
I mean, that's all well and good.
Yeah,
but what is wrong with the people?
That's the human nature, Dwight. It's human nature.
And then you,
there are going to be people who follow the rules to the T, and then there are going to be those who are going to try to get around the rules. This has been going on for us almost a year in terms of lockdown. And so as the time progresses, there are going to be people who are going to defy the orders.
Wow.
I don't think we have to get all worked up about it, but we just need to make sure that enforcement is there. When you defy the orders, you are fined. Or whatever the penalty is for defying the order, you will serve that,
mm-hmm,
and move on.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get your views on it, folks. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Tweet us, Facebook us, text us, 422-4796. All right. okay, well, it's criticizing Dave there. It's just, I guess, sad that someone's saying that they have to politicize both of these.
Dave has already called?
Yeah, you missed that. He was saying, it was because Valley Boys, that's why the police cracked down on that one, as opposed to the Saxons.
But see, even that, there should not be the perception of that happening.
Well, so, I mean, perception, or is it Dave spreading?
No, I'm just saying.
Perception. That really happened? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but see, that's what I'm saying. There should not be the perception. And see, that's why I go back to enforcement. And that's the challenge with us in this country. We cherry pick what we enforce. And it is seen by the public. And so there's no trust. Yeah. So if one group sees the other group did something and got away with it with just a stern warning, they said, okay, well, I'm going to do the same thing.
Wow.
So you give me my stern warning and we all move on. There shouldn't be that perception that there's one set of laws for one set of people and another for the others.
Yeah. Here's a text here. You won't see that in Grand Bahama. Okay. No, that's true. But okay. Another one here. Back to what we were talking about with labor earlier. Morning, Dwight. Don't buy the nonsense being pushed out by the Minister of Labor and the director. Any individual that is not earning the salary is unemployed. As in the case of the hotel workers who are not on the job, they are unemployed until they return to work and begin to earn a salary. Mr. Pinder knows that if the Department of Statistics did a survey today, all of the individuals that have been off the job for more than 3 months without having earned a salary will be regarded as unemployed. Ask yourself the question, what is the government and NIB paying the individuals who have been off the job since March? I give you the answer, unemployment benefits. Well,
yeah. The challenge I have here, with if you look at the article, is saying in December of 2019, the unemployment rate stood at 10.7%, according to the Department of Statistics.
Yeah.
And my concern about that is that's not the real unemployment rate for the Bahamas. Because what
even
they
back then that was
yes,
yeah.
it was not it was it was it's just incorrect.
Yeah.
Because what they did was because Grand Bahama
and Abaco
came offline,
right.
they removed those numbers and they factor in the unemployment rate over the entire Bahamas, excluding Grand Bahama.
Right.
That's incorrect.
That was a big controversy back then as well.
No, but it's incorrect because when you look back in history and you 10 years from now you look at this period. You look at, oh, we only had an unemployment rate of 10.7%.
Yeah.
No. They should have included those numbers in so we got a real picture.
Yeah.
So then now I heard, I think, the Minister of Health tooting on how our unemployment rate is so low during the pandemic. When, and see, they use these things for political gain, trying to make the numbers look better than they really are. No, you have to reflect what it really is. Put in there what the unemployment number is for Grand Bahama. Put in there what the unemployment is for Abaco. And then you do the total unemployment number for the Bahamas so we get a picture of where we really stand.
Oh, boy. That's probably 50%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take this call. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning to you, Dwight, and good morning to you, Pam.
Good morning.
Sharon Johnson. You know, due to IRCA, I can't use the word, but I don't know why politicians seek to intellectually juice us. You know, can I remind Hubert Alexander Minnis that he came in under the promise of transparency, accountability, integrity, anti-corruption, freedom of information, campaign, finance reform, amongst other things. These were absolute promises. But it seems to me that this F&M administration seems to be ignorant about a lot of things. Did they find the Oban file yet? Did they figure out what happened with the BPL yet, anything else? It seems like they don't know what's going on. But the point is that when you go to this, to the mere fact that these people are legally unemployed because the Prime Minister inserted within his lockdown law the company's inability to, or I should say the protection of them firing the individuals from work. So it just they put them in unemployed, coma. Because what happens is when you begin to look at the fact, though, that COVID has shut down in excess of 60% of our MSMs, the micro businesses, the small businesses, and many of the medium-sized businesses that the government has yet to account for. This is why when we, when I hear people talk about, oh, the digitization of the Bahamas and we're getting money from the IDB and everything else, we have yet to produce a single digital aspect of this economy. Speaking of economy, did the Prime Minister promise us the green economy, the blue economy, the orange economy, the knowledge economy, the digital economy, and the conceptual economy? Those are all based on digital aspect for which, you know, data and information is important. But I guess he's ignorant of that because we have yet to get the plan from the ERC as to how these individuals are going to go back to work. But when you go back to the unemployment numbers, the unemployment number sits right there in ministry, in the Ministry of Labor. It sits right there in the Department of Social Services. It sits right there. The most important place it sits is right there at NIB. They need to violate no NIB law. We're not asking for any disclosure of any names, any other statistics, other than how many people do you currently have employed for which you're receiving the National Insurance Fund. Mm. And then we could look at the total workforce of 225,000 and see how many of them are missing. Because I would assume that they're still following the law of NIB. If people are employed, they are working it. And this is what, when you say a digitized country, is all about.
Right.
We are in a new, brand new reality of a hyper-connected, digital, global economy. And yet we are at our leadership, who seems to bask in the arrogance of ignorance concerning anything that happens in this country as our economy totally crumbles.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sienna. Appreciate it. A lot to think about there. Yeah. As you said earlier, it's just a lot of political speak. They say,
yeah, normally what they would say, I think this word came up initially, furloughed, because it was not in our vocabulary, right, in terms of employment and unemployment numbers. We had, you were employed, you were laid off, you're unemployed. Mm-hmm. And so this furloughed came up during this pandemic, when you see countries, bigger countries around the world, rather than having persons completely unemployed, the government provided assistance.
Right.
So you take the case of the UK. They provided up to 80% of their salary to a maximum of 2,500. And then they provided the companies with support so they could pay the extra 20 or so percent. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about furloughed, the question is furloughed the same as unemployed, as being unemployed? But if you are getting your full salary or close to your full salary, then no, you could consider that to be somebody who probably still is,
right,
employed, but temporarily not on the job because of the situation. Mm. But if you're getting maybe less than 1% of your salary, depending what's being paid, you are unemployed, because employment is important for economic growth.
Right.
When people are employed and they're spending money in the economy, you're generating economic activity, then the economy is moving and you're growing. So if you're only getting $100, if you were making before $500 a week, or $400 a week, but you're getting $100 a week. No, that's semantics. Yeah. You are unemployed.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to get more of your messages in, and we'll talk about the COVID numbers and what's happening here with, is this a spike? Is it a temporary blip? What's going on? And that'll lead us into our discussion with the Dr. Nakia Forbes as well. A lot more to get to on this Monday morning here on Morning Blend. Stay with us.
Start of a new way. Basketball is back, baby, and so is NBA League Pass, only with Rev Trio. Sign up for Rev Trio today and enjoy NBA League Pass absolutely free, along with incredible prizes, including a brand new 50-inch smart TV, NBA gear, and more. With tons of prizes and gear, signing up for Trio is the best on- and off-court move this year. Just call 601-8992 or visit www.rev.bs/promotions/trio. Sign up for Rev Trio today and enjoy NBA League Pass absolutely free,
Let me ask you a few questions. What's your name?
Pam.
Favorite food?
Steak.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Is your money safe?
It's under my beds, I guess so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, why?
Unless your money is in a bank or credit union that's a member of the Deposit Insurance Corporation, there's no guarantee it's safe.
Yeah, but what if something happens to the bank?
Your Bahamian dollar deposits are insured up to $50,000, so you'd still be ahead. Plus, your mattress might catch fire. Then what?
Man, those banks and credit unions are looking good right about now.
Visit the DIC's website at www.dic.bs. Protection for your money, guaranteed with DIC.
Morning Blend Business.
The economy.
Finance.
Business.
Industry.
Government sector. Private sector.
Financial services.
Tourism.
Personal finance.
Investing advice.
Consumer issues. Consumer rights.
Trends and business opportunities.
Morning Blend Business. Following Morning Blend every weekday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
Time for your Morning Blend traffic alert. Your first look at traffic brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. And in your real-time traffic at this hour, we're seeing the traffic building on Carmichael Road, eastbound lanes heading towards Blue Hill Road and Blue Hill northbound, just north of Carmichael, heading north towards Soldier Road. That's your hot spot at this hour. We're seeing some of the a little bit of building traffic near the roundabout on Smarabola Highway northbound and Tawny Glen's Darling Highway. Elsewhere, Robinson Road and East Street, that intersection there, eastbound lanes of Robinson Road, and East-West Highway at the intersection with Marathon Road and Robinson Road. You'll be seeing quite a few cars there as you get to that intersection. Prince Charles Drive and Beatrice Avenue and Prince Charles Drive Soldier Road as well. And traffic is building on Fox Road northbound, but not looking so bad right now. So manageable on the streets, but we'll have another real-time report for you in about an hour. That's your Morning Blend Traffic Alert, brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. And it's time for another check of your weather for today, brought to you by Rev Cable Bahamas. Here's what's happening. We've got a persistent high-pressure ridge that will support mostly dry and stable conditions with brisk winds across the area today. Beachgoers should exercise caution due to the risk of rip currents at east and south coast beaches. For all areas, look for partly to mostly sunny, breezy, and very warm conditions with the chance of a few passing showers, mostly fair and a bit breezy tonight. Small craft caution remains in effect for the northwest and central Bahamas, while an advisory continues for the southeast Bahamas. 75 degrees right now in Nassau. Look for highs getting up to around 84 Fahrenheit, 29 Celsius. Overnight lows tonight getting down to about 75 Fahrenheit, 24 Celsius. In your extended outlook, high pressure across the area will gradually shift eastwards through Tuesday ahead of a cold front that's expected to reach just north of the area and become stationary, so not necessarily impacting temperatures much at all. So for tomorrow, Tuesday, that's going to be partly to mostly cloudy and windy conditions with scattered showers and the chance of isolated thunderstorms mainly across the northwest Bahamas. Wednesday, partly cloudy and breezy with a few scattered showers and the chance of isolated thunderstorms mainly across extreme northwestern Bahamas. Partly sunny, warm, and breezy elsewhere. Expect the warm temperatures to stick around for the majority of the week. Not expecting a cool down until the weekend. That's your morning blend weather check brought to you by Rev. Visit rev.bs/imagine to join the conversation about the future of Rev TV and take a very important survey about what you think the future of Rev TV should look like. Rev, you and us together. We'll be back with more Morning Blend after these messages. Stay with us.
Looking for plenty food and you're on a budget?
We are Greek.
Stop into Wendy's and grab our latest bundle. Introducing the Biggie Bag. With the new Biggie Bag, you get a Dave single, junior fries, regular drink, and four-piece nuggets for only $7.25, fat inclusive. Add an apple pie for just $1 more. Now that's a deal.
Motor also hook up, eh?
It's the best on these streets. Available at all locations. Restrictions apply. Wendy's, different inside and out.
Are you ready to break up with your car? Easy Car Sales invites you to fall in love with an electric vehicle. Ditch the gas pump, the expensive mechanics. Feel the freedom, the power. Visit easy242.com and make a date to test drive an electric vehicle today. Get into a better relationship. Find your perfect match at Easy Car Sales and drive electric happily ever after.
With the outbreak of COVID-19, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we remain committed to our customers during this global pandemic. Our Nassau and Freeport branches are open to assist you remotely, Monday to Friday, between 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Call 397-2100 or email info@jsjohnson.com. Be safe, Bahamas. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Your home is where your heart is, but it's more than just shelter. Your home is your workplace. Your home is school for your kids. Your home is even your happy place where you play. Get the best internet connection wherever you are with blazing fast speeds up to 300 megabits per second for as low as $99.99 and installation within 48 hours. Sign up for any of our fiber packages today and get a chance to win a free tablet in your second month. Call or WhatsApp 577-SHOP or 424-SHOP and sign up today. Conditions apply.
Meet Jackie. Jackie's a hard worker with a steady income, but she has a personal loan and multiple credit cards to pay off. To keep her account current, Jackie opted for a loan from Fidelity Bank to consolidate her debt into one monthly payment and earn interest on a built-in savings account. Be like Jackie. Call 356-7764 to book a complimentary financial coaching session. Fidelity also offers virtual assistance. Fidelity. We're good for you.
Screws and Fasteners World, Balfour Avenue and Palm Beach Street, has those hard-to-find fasteners for you right now. You can find stainless steel regular hex, carriage bolts, galvanized bolts, threaded rods, nails, self-tap screws, sex bolts, anchor bolts, turnbuckles, masonry tools, hand tools, and weed whacker strings. Check out the rope selection and car body fasteners, too. Special orders are welcome. It's your number one fastener store. Screws and Fasteners World, Balfour Avenue and Palm Beach Streets. Call 326-1976.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Three times, let's wind. On the fourth time, I'll blow your mind. Oh, 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 oh. Whatever you want, go, oh, oh. So take this body and live it up. Go, 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 go,
We are back here with Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Quite strong, along with Pamela Musgrove on this Monday morning. We are talking about what's in the news. And we're going to read some of your messages before we get to talk about what's happening with the COVID numbers. All right, so we've been talking about that rush outs over the weekend, jumping rush outs in defiance of the emergency order, and just what's going on with labor in the country. Are you unemployed? Are you furloughed? Are you what's what? Okay, so here's some text messages. Somebody says here, good morning. I hear the caller, but the rush out... about the rush out, but did he say Mr. Christie was there, huh? What? And that it was done on the church grounds, not the government road. So in my view, the question is, did the church get a warning or ticket about that? Okay. I totally agree with Pam. I don't see the big deal. Find the people and move on.
Well, I mean,
it's not like you have a busted daylight. It's like you could be putting us in jeopardy, putting yourselves in jeopardy. It's a little more detailed than just, oh, here's your fine, go away now.
Do you know how many parties are going on in this country that the police don't even know about? Mm-hmm. For the most part, a lot of people are acting as they did prior to the pandemic.
All the more reason to be terrified.
No, that's my point. I'm saying people are going to violate the law. You just have to find them and deal with them.
Mm.
That's human nature.
Okay. All right. Again, it's not like you just are outside when you should be inside. It's not just that simple.
You just continue to tell people to adhere to the COVID-19 protocols, do what you need to do, keep your social distance, and then you have the COVID police or the task force checking to make sure people are adhering to them. And you encourage people, if you see something suspicious, use call the hotline. Wasn't the hotline given out? If you see a lot of cars at a particular establishment, call the hotline. The COVID task force or police will show up there, give citations, fine people, tell them they're not supposed to be doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then we move on, Dwight, because, I mean, people are going to do it.
Oh, boy. Here's a text. Dwight, the uptick in COVID-19 cases will continue to rise because some people are playing stupid. Oh, boy. Junking rush outs and funerals helps the rise in cases because some people are not serious at all about COVID. Another one. The real question, does it make sense that only 20 people can attend a funeral? Does that make sense?
No, in real times, in normal times, of course not. Of course not. And traditionally, you know, funerals are a big thing in the country. But during the COVID pandemic, you know, there have to be some restrictions put in place so as not to prevent the spread. And I think initially when this happened, I think they were finding that persons went to funerals and a lot of persons who attended particular funerals, you know, they caught the COVID.
Yeah. Funerals and weddings.
Yeah. Yep.
Because
you tend to be all together and, you know, meshed together. So maybe even if you have more than the 20, there would really have to be strict protocols adhered to. I mean, people sit apart. No, I mean, if you were to tell persons that you cannot be too emotional at a funeral, people will look at you and say, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the way to deal with that is to restrict the number of persons attending the funeral service just to family members, immediate family members. So that's probably the compromise that the officials are dealing with. And it's happening around the world. Because you remember back when Italy was having their challenges, that was the same thing. You know, they were, in some cases, they were burying people without the family members there. Yep. So it's happening around the world.
Let's take this call and we'll get back to your messages. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Good morning, folks.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to figure out when the Saxons became a FNM group. You know, the Wally became a PLB group. You know, I don't see it. You know, but what I really want to discuss is the platform of the PLB and the FNM. You know, what a tangible difference is there? Is there a platform? Is their plan.
Have you heard anything, Paula? Have you heard anything?
I've not heard anything.
No. Okay.
You know, the other day I heard Ms. Kamala Afi articulating their platform, you know, about the taxation and bringing forward progressive taxation rather than this regressive taxation. You know, she also talked about, there's a number of things she talked about, the platform and immigration, you know, but these people that, you know, it's like they come into the power for the last 20, three times without a platform, you know, just to change the government.
Yeah.
What's your platform, you know? If the PLP or the opposition had a platform, you know, a plan for this pandemic or the situation we face ourselves in, maybe, you know what I'm saying, we could kind of look at them, you know what I mean, logically, but all the same, say, hey, you know, that the government today is not doing anything.
So. Yeah, because well, they feel, yeah.
Thank you very much.
We put them there because they feel that we don't want a platform. We don't need it.
I don't know where they got that from, but we've
but
seen
about
it in the years gone by. We get their manifestos, what, a few weeks before
right.
the election?
And
maybe
then
a
during
month?
the rallies, they would pull out some of that
yeah.
out of the manifesto. But
maybe.
I think what is happening, too, is they don't want to make any promises because obviously they don't live up to them. You see? So what you're having now is nobody making any promises about what they're going to do. They use this excuse, even though they're all in parliament, that we didn't know how bad it was. Why didn't you know how bad it was?
Mm-hmm.
The numbers were released on a regular basis. You could discuss them in parliament, but they don't. And I think even more so, like you see they are naming candidates for these constituencies. And the question is, like, what are the major concerns in your constituency? Because a member of parliament really is supposed to be like an activist. You're that leader in the constituency, not necessarily, oh, you have to go to funerals or go to weddings or give out stuff. Yes, sometimes people do that on special occasions. But at the same time, when you go into the constituencies, what are the major concerns in your constituencies? And you take, for instance, they would talk about Nassau Village and how Moultrie went and got the pump. And people were complaining about that, right? What is supposed to happen, right, is when they stand up in parliament, they are supposed to bring forward those concerns mm-hmm. that their constituents have. But you notice what happened when the government, when a member of parliament for the governing party, when they are in the house, they don't say anything. Because you cannot make your party look bad by saying the water well isn't working or electricity is a problem for my constituency. So you keep that under the hush, and then you have the opposition highlighting that. And when they go in the house, it's the same thing that's happening. It's a flip-flop.
Yep.
But these persons who they are electing to represent their constituencies, they are supposed to be activists, so to speak, in their constituency, leaders in their constituencies, looking at the major concerns and issues in their constituencies and seeing how they can possibly address them. But they go in for 5 years. They come out, and there's no change or no difference in the constituencies.
Every time. Let's take this call quickly, and then we'll read some of your messages, then we've got to take a break. Good morning. Caller, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
I'm listening, but I just want to share when you on the thought about a funeral, persons in the funeral. I understand in England right now, persons can go to church, but they cannot sing in church. That's how serious it is.
Right, I'm hearing that in a number of places. Isn't
no
that
singing.
Insane? You
no,
see how
no
it,
singing.
Yep.
No singing at all. The mass, but beyond, but no singing at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
initially in the pandemic, choirs were some of the biggest spreaders.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so this is how serious it is.
Yeah.
And this is why the funeral rule is here.
Yeah.
Because of how people behave, as Pam was saying earlier. Right?
And you don't want to tell people not to
scream and holler
mm-hmm.
and cry out.
Mm-hmm.
And, right? It's very difficult. And even... I don't know. It's not a punishment. People seeing it as that. It's not someone being spiteful. It's we've got a major problem.
But then again, that's communication, though, Dwight. You
mm.
have to have persons talking about that, because some people we may think that it's common knowledge that this is happening around the world and this is what people are doing, but it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So when you bring out these restrictions, you say you know, you say, this is why we are doing this.
Yeah. Let's take this call very quickly. Good morning, caller. You're on the air. Caller, good morning. Hi, are you there?
Yes, morning.
Hi.
Am I on?
Yes, you are. Good morning. Yes, you are.
Yes, morning. How's it going?
Doing well.
Good. Okay, I kind of look at this from a really philosophical perspective as it relates to what's going on with the pandemic, since nobody seemed to know exactly where the balance is. But when we look at the way our universe is designed, it's round, it sits between two axes, a fraction of the size, and it rotates. And that speaks more to balance than anything else. And I'm in my thinking, if you're thrown into, you come out of two hurricanes, one major, then swung right into a pandemic, the one thing that has to be done is you have to find the balance. And like I said, it seems as though no country in the world can say for sure we found the balance and they can point at it. So everybody's either trying to find the best place they can strike a balance, they can live with. Okay, but in terms of how we're doing, the there was a report in the NASA Guardian on the 22nd where the global index COVID-19 report lists the Bahamas as one of 27 countries that has tamed the virus mm-hmm. in terms of flattening the curve based on their measures. I don't know if we remember that, but, you know, I think this is the type of thing we need to be, if we're going to get an idea of where we are, we got to look at it from a global view, you know, because it's not just the Bahamas. We're part of an entire world, and if there's a major report coming out that say we've checked all around the world, and there are a few countries that are getting it right. They seem to be doing their best. As a matter of fact,
and that was well publicized, mm-hmm. right?
Pardon?
It was well publicized here.
Well, mind you, what's gone wrong is publicized every day, every week, every month. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you're saying, well, it was publicized enough. We don't need to talk about it anymore.
Well, you know, that's human nature. People bring up the pain they're feeling, not the joy.
A lot of things we need to change, and maybe this is a good time to start, because nobody knows where we're going to be in 5 years, another year. Nobody knows. You know, but I say based on these major reports, it makes sense to somebody like me, because I could look at this and from a global view, see where my country is. Yeah. Oh, we're
but
one
you
of
see, you hear that and you think, oh, we're doing well. We've got a handle on this, right? Look at that. Celebrate this. But other people hear, well, that means I can do what I used to do before. Right. And that everything is fine now. And why can't I have my party? Why can't I do the rush out? And so, as you say, it's a balance and it's hard. And people say, well, yeah. Right. And how do you get them to understand? No, this is just the beginning still.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why standards can't rest lie in people. They have to lie in a document or something we believe, put it on the wall where everybody can see and adhere to it. Because when standards lie in people, what happens when the person doesn't feel good tomorrow?
Yeah.
That means the standard is subject to change.
Yeah, definitely. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
mm-hmm.
it. All right, let's read some messages. We've got to go to the break. Somebody says here, there were many Super Bowl parties in gated and non-gated communities. I was invited, so the uptick is starting due to the results of those parties. I stayed home, though. Yeah, I know what you mean. I didn't have my big annual Super Bowl party this year. I did not. Right?
You didn't?
So, no. Sadly. Mm. Oh, boy. Hopefully next year. Mm. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
This is exactly why PM Menace has kept the emergency order in place, and the lack of discipline showing by many of us is the reason why cases are on the rise. Yes, 59 cases between Thursday and Saturday alone. Someone says here, someone called the police for a party next door. A while later, they looked outside, and the police were walking out with their own plates of food.
I can believe that. I can believe
people
that.
Like to spread stories like that. Now, we can believe it, but is it true? Is it true?
Was it the Minister of Labor who said anecdotally that he believed that the
right.
unemployment?
Right. That he believed that.
Well, anecdotally, I believe that the police
right.
did that.
Mm.
He said the standard.
Wow. This one says, I have the answer. Just give the dead person the ticket because they caused the funeral. Well, I don't think that's funny. You think that's funny? Man, that's horrible. This one says, when are the cabinet ministers going to take a pay cut? Okay. Each party has a platform. The last time they were updated was before the last election. And that was barely updated. Someone says here, Pam, you are on an extra roll in regards to the unemployment issue. Here's the recommendation that the Department of Labor should have used to get an estimate on the unemployment numbers while waiting on the Department of Statistics to do a formal survey. Number one, find out from NIB on a monthly basis what is happening with the numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In March, 35,000 individuals applied for unemployment benefits. That's an example. In June, 31,000 applied because NIB received contributions for those 4,000 that were receiving unemployment. Number two, the hotel. This is a long one. Number two, the hotel sector. In March, 10,000 were sent home without salary until January 2021. In February, 2,000 returned to work with full salary. Number three, get from inland revenue the VAT intake on a monthly basis. These are just some variables of where the country is. P.S., the Department of Labor can collect the number of small or medium-sized businesses that permanently shut down and the number of employees. It goes on to say, I oppose all the junk and rush outs and call on the police to do their jobs and enforce the law.
Yeah, and, you know, NIB used to, a while back, release the unemployment benefit payout. But they have stopped that,
mm-hmm.
and which is really good because if you see first world countries, they will release those numbers like on a quarterly basis to let you have an idea of where the country is. But those numbers aren't released anymore, not to the public. Maybe officials have them, but they're not released to the public. I just think it's so political, Dwight,
yeah.
Because see, if the numbers are not trending in your the way you think they should trend, that it reflects bad on you in terms of your political organization. And so I just think it's so political, and they both do it.
Yeah. It's also immature.
Yeah.
It's also immature. This is crazy.
Just because they don't want to be assessed based on results.
Yes, of course.
They want to be assessed based on rhetoric.
Yeah. Ridiculous stuff. And we've been calling for this, for the monthly assessment for so long.
Yeah. But the numbers are there. They used to do it, and they used to do it consistently, but you can find them,
yeah.
I think, probably all the way back to 2016. They haven't released those numbers yet.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about numbers, different types of numbers, though, the COVID numbers. What's behind this? Dr. Nakia Forbes is going to be speaking with us. Stay tuned for that. This is Morning Blend on Guardian Radio, 96.9.
Roaming just got easier. Say hello to more with our new Liberty Prime plan. With more minutes, more texts, and more data to do the things you love right here at home and even when you travel. With the all-new Liberty Prime, Liberty Premium, and Liberty Elite, you've got one less worry. Roam again. Alive. Believe in best.
Believe in best.
Imagine, that's where every advancement begins, with an idea that things can be different, better. Now, imagine a world where your entertainment experience was all about you, your style, your show, at your budget. And well, that's what we've imagined. To join the conversation and learn more about the future of Rev TV, visit us at rev.bs/imagine.
Stay a step ahead of technology with certainty and support from Custom Computers. Our know-how team is here to help you zero in on your next big tech purchase, finding solutions that take your productivity to the next level using only the best and most reliable brands. With 4 stores all across Nassau on East Bay, West Bay, Old Fort Bay, and Palmdale, there's no stopping you from stepping up your tech. Reach out to us at 396-1100. Find trust in your tech. Count on Custom Computers.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The people are rising. We thought it was a lockdown. They opened the fire. Them bullets was flying. Who said it was a lockdown? Goddamn lie.
Oh my, time heals all, but you out of time now. Judge gotta watch us from the clock tower. Little tear gas cleared the whole place out. I'll be back with the hazmat for the next round.
We are back here with Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Dwight Strong on with Pamela Musgrove. And as we said, we're going to be talking about COVID and the numbers that we've been seeing over the past few days. It seems like a slight uptick, but that's just from our perspective. We want to talk to the head of the Infectious Disease Unit at the Ministry of Health, Dr. Nakia Forbes, who's joining us live now. Good morning, Dr. Forbes.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Strong. Good morning, Bahamas. Thank you for having me.
Great, as always, to be with you. All right, so 59 cases of COVID between Thursday and Saturday after seeing single-digit numbers for a number of days last month and earlier this month. We now are seeing double digits, and it seems to be consistently, well, still low numbers, but much higher than they were a few weeks back. Are we seeing something going on? Is this the start of a new surge in numbers?
Well, what we can say at this time is there has definitely been an uptick in cases last week. And what's of concern is that there is also an uptick in hospitalizations.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at this scientifically, the persons who are hospitalized are those persons who are having severe disease or who are critically ill. And we know that based upon the clinical features and the spectrum of COVID, that only about 20% of persons will actually be having severe manifestations and a smaller number critically ill, about 5% of the total number of persons with COVID. And so when we see an uptick in hospitalizations, it also follows that there should be an uptick of asymptomatic persons, mild and moderate persons in the community that may not be coming forward, for example. And overall, that is why we look at hospital admissions as one of the indicators for how the outbreak is going.
Mm-hmm. We know the last time we spoke to you, you were saying there's no easy way for us here in the country to determine whether these are some of the newer strains. Is that likely what we're seeing here, though, that these could be newer strains, especially accounting for the hospitalizations?
So what's to know about detecting strains and newer strains is that worldwide, when people have COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, it's not automatically done that the person will have a phylogenetic study or a way to determine what strain it is. But countries do surveillance. A certain percentage of persons diagnosed with SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19 do have a study so that you can know what strain it is. And that is how information is generally generated to determine what strains there are and to do surveillance on the mutations of COVID-19. And so there was a send out of some of the samples for the patients to determine what strain is circulating. I don't have information that we have that back, but remember these new strains, especially the so-called UK strain, that's B117, that is in our region, and it is predicted to become the major circulating strain of COVID-19 in the United States by about March. And we know that with global travel, that's all that's needed to spread infectious diseases, and COVID is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. And so it stands to reason that that strain can be introduced if it hasn't already been introduced. We know that it is more infectious, and so we should be on high alert, and we should really be following public health guidance even more.
I see that we have 1,132 cases active. Are these persons all quarantining? And where is the ministry in terms of contact tracing and enforcement of the quarantining orders?
So when, thank you very much. When you're speaking about active cases, those are persons who have COVID-19 and they haven't recovered yet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they should be in isolation, and that can be home isolation, or it could be in a facility or in a hospital until they are clinically recovered. And of course, the surveillance unit is still busily at work. They're one of the champions of this response, and I want to really give credit to those hardworking nurses. They are continuing to do their work.
Now, I mean, the question about contact tracing is interesting because with these numbers going up, I'm not hearing, and maybe that's just me, I know that initially we saw numbers and people were told, you've come into contact, you need to isolate, you need to quarantine. I'm not hearing that much at all these days. Are we changing our approach to this, or am I just not understanding what's happening here?
No, the approach has not changed. So for those persons who are high-risk contacts, I'm going to go over what that is. So a high-risk contact is someone who's come within close contact within 6 feet for a period of time that could be 15 minutes, or it could accumulate to 15 minutes over a period of time with no mask on, for example. Those persons would be in quarantine, and there would be recommendations for them to be tested if they become symptomatic or otherwise. So those recommendations still exist.
So how many persons are in quarantine to date?
I don't have that information. I'm sorry, I can't speak to that.
All right. So with the information we get from the Ministry of Health, it has been redesigned, as we know, a couple of times since we started all of this, but it isn't as clear as it used to be about whether people have traveled. Do we know whether these cases are, I guess, locally grown, or whether these are people who have traveled to perhaps some hot spots in around the world?
So that information is gathered by the surveillance unit and the contact tracers and investigators that do see these patients. And there is travel information on the COVID dashboard regarding these patients. So, for example, as reported on the 12th, there were two persons who had travel within 14 days. So that could be travel, but then again, there could be other information that could be gathered. For example, is it travel related? Were they in contact with someone who has traveled? And there's further information that the surveillance unit and the nurses will gather in terms of where they've been and if they've been in contact with persons. And it does take some time to get that information.
Now, I know rapid antigen tests are being used widely here now, and I've heard people express some concerns about this, that if you do get a positive on a rapid antigen test, and you did this at a private facility, how can we guarantee that the person does the follow-up RT-PCR test? You know, you're required to, but how do we know for sure they have gone on to get that test?
Well, that's a good question. So first, let me talk about these tests and how they can be used. So at this time, the RT-PCR, the polymerase chain reaction test, is the gold standard of testing. But there is the rapid antigen test, which is faster, and there are some benefits for using that test in terms of it doesn't need lab expertise and so on. The thing with the rapid antigen test is it has a use, and it can be useful in diagnosis for persons who have symptoms within a period of time, within about 7 days. And so if someone has the corresponding symptoms, they can do a rapid antigen test, and that can be helpful for diagnosis. The tricky part is if persons are asymptomatic. We're using it for screening. That's not generally recommended by the WHO at this time. So if someone has symptoms again and has a positive rapid antigen test, that will suffice for diagnosis. They don't necessarily need to do an RT-PCR.
If they have symptoms.
Correct. Or now, even in other contexts, for example, if they've been a close contact or as a part of an outbreak investigation.
And will they be counted towards the positive COVID cases in the country?
It should be reported to the Ministry of Health
with
the epidemiological information, and that has been requested. And we do need that information to monitor what's happening with the outbreak.
So that,
when I say epidemiological information with the clinical features and the person's risk, there's a form that accompanies these things that needs to be sent to the surveillance unit and the Ministry of Health, the chief medical officer, so that we can monitor what's happening in the outbreaking country.
So we are certain that all the positive rapid antigen tests are, those people are being tested, or we, what are we saying here? Those numbers are counting towards the overall numbers that we're seeing?
It has been requested, but like I said, if someone has symptoms with a positive rapid antigen test, And that is usually, that will suffice for diagnosis. It's the negative persons that are a different kettle of fish, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. All right, for diagnosis, but again, for the numbers that we're seeing, you're saying it's been requested, but...
Is it included in the number?
Definitely included.
It should be included in the numbers.
Okay. All right. We've heard the Minister of Education talk about schools should be reopening by next week. He keeps referring to the Ministry of Health, though, on the guidance of the Ministry of Health. What is the Ministry of Health saying about that at this time? Can schools reopen for face-to-face, in-person learning as early as next week, even with these numbers that we're seeing, the slight uptick that we're seeing right now?
I can only tell you from an infectious diseases perspective what we know about COVID-19 in schools. And that should help to enable decision makers to make that decision. But this is what we know about COVID-19 in schools, that the situation reflects what's happening in the community. So if you are having a surge, if there's a huge outbreak of COVID-19 in the community, there's going to be a similar number of students going to school with COVID-19. Now, I always like to look at evidence instead of what people think or believe will happen. So there are studies looking at COVID-19 and the school situation. One of those is an Australian study. There's also a large North American study going on about COVID-19 and how and what's happening in schools. And so generally, the situation as it related to schools was that school does not cause COVID-19 to spread in the community. It wouldn't be the cause of super spreader event and cause an outbreak in the community mainly. And that is with the understanding that schools would have to follow the full public health guidelines and recommendations, masks, social distancing as best as possible, hand washing, etc. And in the Australian study, there was a 2% attack rate and adults were affected more than children. And in North America, like I was saying, it was determined that this really reflects what's going on in the community. And one would have to look at the level of COVID in the community to determine if school could open. And furthermore, that the public health guidelines would have to be followed. And the schools that followed the public health guidelines did better, far better than those that were not adherent to the public health guidelines, for example.
All right, so if it were up to you, if you had the final say, would you open schools next week?
I will say that the curve had been flattened up to about a week ago. And as it relates to the uptick in cases, it's important to state that what do we do when we see an uptick in cases? We have to look closer at those cases. We have to see if they're related to one another. Is it a cluster of cases? Are there any linkages between the cases? We have to look at that, and then we have to look at other indicators. We have to look at hospitalizations, the percent positives in tests, the 7-day moving average, number of persons who were presented to healthcare settings, to fully be informed about what is going on. So a trend is more important than say one isolated day where cases are going up. And the due diligence is being done. Now the curve had been flattened to that point. And we had to have a balance on how to live with COVID-19 because it's certainly not going away. And so I would say that in the context that we are in a far better position than we were, that schools could look at reopening if it were entirely up to me, and it's not, but put in place the public health measures.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of those measures would include?
Well, we do know that everyone wearing a mask can help to reduce the spread and transmission of COVID-19, hand washing. There should be physical distancing. The number of persons in the classroom, for example, could be lower. There could be plexiglass shields, for example, in place. You could have staggered times. Some schools would look at things like, could they have alternate days, for example, that is being done in some settings? Could there be a staggered time, staggered break times, or are some strategies so that not all the kids are out at break at once? There's temperature checks, which you know, there's room for discussion about the efficacy or and benefit of temperature checks, but it's a relatively easy intervention if the child is sick. Is there a plan in place for how to isolate where the child would go to the nurse? How is testing done? An outbreak control program, workplace cleanliness, sanitization. So I don't want to take up the whole show talking about that, but there is being work done with Ministry of Health focal points on the schools and reopening, and that it would be, it should be in keeping with public health guidelines. So those things have to be in place, just like it is in place every place else, whilst we learn to live with COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. The reality is, when we talk about schools opening, it's really only the public schools generally we are speaking about, because right now there are private schools who have face-to-face, like a hybrid program where you have face-to-face and you also have remote. So most of the private schools are back to face-to-face in some cases, and in other cases remote. So we're really only talking about the whether or not the public schools can reopen. And to that, is the Ministry of Health talking with the ministry, the stakeholders, the ministry, the parents, the teachers, about what is required or the minimum that is required for them to open the schools safely, the public schools?
Yes, there is a focal point at the Ministry of Health for reopening of schools, and that is being done.
Okay.
We got another question about, as we were talking about earlier, about what's happening with the Junkanoo rush outs, yet people are still very concerned about funerals and why they are limited to 20. When you see those videos and when you hear the cries about how unfair it is that we are limiting funerals, what do you say to all of that?
Well, I overheard you speaking before you introduced me, and you are spot on when you say that COVID-19, it's going to be here for a while. And I did hear your caller that reference that the Bahamas was listed in the countries that have learned to live with COVID-19 and have flattened the curve. And you're right, it is a balance, because we have to keep the curve flattened. And so I can never stop saying enough, mm-hmm, that when the curve is flattened, you still see some cases per day.
Yeah.
It's not gone. Even if it's single digits, 9 cases one day, those are the ones that have symptoms, you understand, or were tested for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to know that the number of cases that are reported is always an underrepresentation of the true number of cases.
Wow. Okay, can I hold you right there for a second? We're going to break for news and pick up. Yep, okay, thank you. Talking with Dr. Nakia Forbes, talking about the COVID numbers, where we are at today, a lot more after the break. How they did them on the ground. Speaking of the COVID, is it still going around? Why don't you tell me about the looting? What's that really all about? Cause they throw away black lives like paper towels plus unemployment rate. What, 40 million now? Killed a man in broad day. Might never see a trial. We just want to break chains like slaves in the South. Started in the North End, but we in the downtown, right?
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back to Morning Blend here on Guardian Radio 96.9. We are streaming live on GuardianTalkRadio.com and on the Guardian Radio app for smart devices. We're also on your televisions on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 and BTC Flow Channel 612. You can tweet us at MorningBlend969 or Facebook.com/MorningBlend969. Text us 422-4796. And now at 8:18, it's time for your final look at weather for today, brought to you by Bahamas First Insurance. We'll final for this hour. We'll have another check for you coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But a persistent high-pressure ridge will continue to support mostly dry and stable conditions with brisk winds across the area today. Beachgoers should continue to exercise caution due to the high risk of rip currents at East and South Coast beaches. For all areas today, look for mostly sunny, breezy, and very warm conditions with a slight chance of a few passing showers. Mostly fair and a bit breezy tonight. Small craft caution remains in effect for the northwest and central Bahamas, while an advisory continues for the southeastern Bahamas. It's 76 degrees right now under partly cloudy skies in Nassau. Look for highs getting up to around 84 Fahrenheit, 29 Celsius. Overnight lows tonight getting down about 75 Fahrenheit, 24 Celsius. In your extended outlook, high pressure across the area will gradually shift towards the east through Tuesday ahead of a cold front that's expected to reach just north of the islands and become stationary, so not really impacting our weather all that much, that cold front. So for tomorrow, Tuesday, partly is mostly cloudy and windy with scattered showers and the chance of isolated thunderstorms mainly across the northwest Bahamas. Wednesday, partly cloudy and breezy with a few scattered showers and the chance of isolated thunderstorms mainly across the extreme northwestern islands. Partly sunny, warm, and breezy to windy elsewhere. Again, temperatures holding in the 80s for highs and 70s, mid-70s for lows for most of the week. We're expecting a cold front to move through on the weekend. That could drop temperatures quite a bit. That's your Morning Blend weather check brought to you by Bahamas First. What's first for you comes first for us. And 8:20 the time for another check of your traffic for this morning, brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. Your real-time traffic, what a difference an hour makes. We're seeing the heavy traffic now on Smile Butler Highway, the northbound lane, heading towards Tawny Goings Darling Highway. Gladstone Road also busy this morning, the northbound lane, heading towards JFK Drive. And Blue Hill Road, for everybody coming out of the south, Blue Hill Road just north of Soldier Road, as is typical. Heavy traffic as you get over that hill heading towards Independence Drive. Independence Drive might be the hottest spot on the island at this moment. That's traffic both directions, west and eastbound. And eastbound on Taunequam's Drive Highway heading towards Independence Drive and that roundabout with Blue Hill Road as well, also looking congested. Soldier Road between Blue Hill and East Street also busy, especially eastbound. And East Street south, in mainly the northbound lanes between Soldier and East-West Highway, and just north of East-West Highway as well, heading towards Robinson Road, also seeing some congestion. Elsewhere, we've got Eastern Road, westbound, just west of Fox Hill, going to be going slow there, and Bernard Road, heavy traffic near some of the schools in that area, mainly the westbound lanes, but also eastbound in some spots, Prince Charles Drive, westbound as well, Beatrice Avenue and Robinson Road, west of Soldier Road. Those are going to be your hottest spots this morning. Keep that in mind as you make your way out. That's your real-time traffic and your Morning Blend traffic alert brought to you by RBC Royal Bank.
Hear that? That's the sound of your money working for you. Because at CFAL, we know you work hard for your money, so we make sure your money works hard for you. In 20 years as a leading investment firm, we've helped thousands of Bahamians grow their wealth and build a more stable future with savings plans, pensions, and wealth services to suit everyone. Whoever you are, whatever you do, we have financial solutions that will work hard for you. Visit or call us today to put your money to work. CFAL, seize your future today.
Your home is where your heart is, but it's more than just shelter. Your home is your workplace. Your home is school for your kids. Your home is even your happy place where you play. Get the best internet connection wherever you are with blazing fast speeds up to 300 megabits per second for as low as $99.99 and installation within 48 hours. Sign up for any of our fiber packages today and get a chance to win a free tablet in your second month. Call or WhatsApp 577-SHOP or 424-SHOP and sign up today. Conditions apply.
RBC and Visa bring you a benefit as unique as you to enjoy Disney Plus. Get 2 months of the all-new Disney Plus streaming subscription on us if you have an RBC Visa Platinum card. Learn more by visiting www.rbc.com/Caribbean/Disney. Reimagine new ways to bank better.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
I want you to feel it. Bring the thing now.
Feel that rhythm, the rhythm, the rhythm. Feel that rhythm.
Turn it up now.
Feel that rhythm, the rhythm, the rhythm. Feel that rhythm.
Bring the rhythm now.
Feel that rhythm, the rhythm, the rhythm. Feel that rhythm. Feel that rhythm, the rhythm, the rhythm. Feel that rhythm.
Hey.
Feel that rhythm. Bounce off the wall. Forget about the reggae and the dance hall. Break and sweep. Give me jungle.
We're back here with Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Dwight Strong along with Pamela Musgrove. And we continue our discussion with Dr. Nakia Forbes, the Director of Infectious Disease at the Ministry of Health. And before the break, we're asking you about what your take is on this when you see these videos of people at rush outs and hear about parties still going on and people getting fined. For events they're still having, and yet we're still having the calls for more people to be allowed to attend weddings and funerals, even though, as you say, the numbers, we're still having those numbers, and that still means something. Do you think people, though, are getting complacent? They're thinking, well, we're getting applauded from international bodies. We've cracked the code. We've got a handle on this, and everything's going to be okay. You think that's what's happening here?
Just try to make my points in brief because I think we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, to flatten the curve is one thing, but you have to keep it flattened. And COVID-19 is not going away. There are 108.8 million cases that have been reported globally. So it's here. It's going to be here for a while. And we have to learn to live with it and keep the curve flattened. So you're absolutely right that if you go back to business as usual, there is going to be spread of COVID-19. And like I said, you have to learn from your previous experiences and from science. And there are reports of countries that have gone back to business as usual. And exactly what happens is that cases will spread. And so we cannot get fatigued because it will lead to an increase in cases and further waves of COVID-19. We need to remember that it's here. And like I was saying, I can't stress enough that when you see even cases in the single digits per day, the important thing to know is that the number of confirmed cases is always lower than the actual number of cases everywhere in every country. And so you do have to modify your behavior to suit and follow the recommendations to prevent COVID spread. If you put down your guard, we will exactly be in a problem where we're having huge surges and waves. Mm-hmm. And that has been documented scientifically from country experiences. As in the last year, as we've been navigating this COVID-19 pandemic. So please keep your guard up, especially with new infectious strains. It's very important to keep things under control.
So from the data that you have, where is it showing the source of the spread? Like which areas, so that we could know and probably remind us to be careful when we go about our daily activities?
So if you look at the Ministry of Health dashboard, you'll see that the cases are reported every day, and there's also a breakdown, an island breakdown or geographic breakdown as to where there are cases. And so as it has been, the majority of cases have been in New Providence, and the Ministry of Health does also inform when that information is available, if there are clusters of cases related to any particular thing.
Yeah, so that's what I'm asking. So are there any clusters that you can shed light on today related to, like, are you seeing funerals, food stores, workplace,
Well, I couldn't specifically say that there is any cluster today that I can single out, but I can tell you, based upon our past experience and based on the international past experiences, there have been outbreaks that have been related to funerals, for example, to gatherings. Mr. Strawn had been talking about choirs that was happening internationally in the previous several months, as we've been documenting what's been happening with COVID-19, but I couldn't specifically pinpoint one in country right now.
Mm-hmm. I have some questions about the vaccines and just the vaccination process. All right, so we're hearing, and it's looking like it's likely that we're going to need to get a vaccine at least annually. Is that right?
Well, let's talk about the context. So that recommendation hasn't come out yet from any regulatory or advisory bodies. So there's a context to that information. So there are several COVID-19 vaccines that are available and being used in several countries worldwide. So what we know to date is that there are emerging strains of COVID-19, mutant strains, and that does happen in usual virology. And we know that some of the vaccines are not fully efficacious to some of these strains. I'm going to give an example, a specific example. So that's not the case across the board with all of these strains. But for example, the South African strain, there has been demonstrated reduced efficacy, or basically in regular English, the vaccine doesn't work as well, but it still has some use against this South African strain. And that is the Oxford vaccine that I think the efficacy was reduced to about 60%. And that means that it was not as good at preventing mild to moderate symptomatic COVID-19, but there still was a benefit in preventing severe COVID-19 and hospitalizations and death. So there was a benefit, but not the full benefit as compared to other strains. Mm. We know that viruses do mutate. That happens normally. And so if you know that there are 108 million cases, if the virus is out there circulating, then it follows that it will, that there could be more mutations seen. And so that means that for full efficacy, vaccines can be tweaked for these emerging strains. And so that is where a booster for COVID-19 vaccines will become relevant. And that may be something that is being advised and that we may see happen. Well, that is being studied by scientists right now.
Mm-hmm. So one taking a vaccine will not mean that you will be exempt from wearing masks or even having to get tested, RT-PCR tests and even rapid antigen tests. You're still going to be required to be tested. Likely, is that what we're saying? Is that what it's looking like at this point?
So there's a context for these things. So let me try and explain it. So the COVID-19 vaccines, they have proven to be very efficacious. That means that they work very well. Those persons that got vaccinated, the science says, the science from the clinical trial is that for most of these vaccines, persons who got the vaccine were far less likely to get COVID-19 or even SARS-CoV infection. And if you do get it, for example, in the Pfizer vaccine clinical trial, only one person who got the vaccine got COVID-19 as compared to other persons who did not receive the vaccine. That one person who did get SARS-CoV-2 did not have symptoms. And so there is benefit for these vaccines. But remember that there could be emerging resistant strains. And so it stands to reason that if one gets the COVID-19 vaccine, it would still be prudent to wear a mask and follow the public health recommendations. Furthermore, remember these vaccines, it's a vaccine series. The day you get it, it takes a while to develop immunity. It takes about 2 weeks after getting the first vaccine, and the full immunity isn't until after the full series of doses is received. And like I said, so it would still be reasonable to follow the public health guidelines to further reduce the risk of getting COVID-19. So remember, this is a combination prevention mm-hmm. approach. Just like where when you wear a mask, you still need to not gather in a crowd and keep your physical distance. A vaccine will help to prevent you from getting COVID-19. And so we will be following these public health recommendations for a while, because COVID-19 is here and it's going to be here for a while. So we'll continue to have to do that. Now, I want to say that there is already some scientific guidance for what you could do to modify certain public health protocols after getting a vaccine. For example, the CDC came out last week and said that if one gets the COVID-19 vaccine and is now in contact, or somebody is a close contact of someone with COVID-19, you may not need to quarantine and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. So that's being developed.
So, but are you worried that people hearing that will say, well, my goodness, I'm still going to have to spend money to get tests even after the vaccine? What is the point of all this?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I see your point. So let's clear that up. So the first thing to note is that there is benefit in getting vaccines. They can prevent you from getting COVID-19. They can prevent you from getting sick, ending up in hospital, and dying. Now, suppose someone gets a vaccine. Remember I said that it will take at least a week or two after the first shot to see some efficacy. And for those two series vaccines, the full efficacy wouldn't be until after the second shot, a couple weeks after that. So if someone got a COVID-19 vaccine and then got flu-like symptoms, yeah, they should still absolutely get tested. And so we already have heard that someone could start the vaccination process, and a couple days after that, get COVID symptoms. That is still possible, but not the usual experience. And so the take-home message is, if you get the vaccine, you're far less likely to get COVID. If you do, if you're the uncommon person who does, you're far less likely to get sick and be symptomatic. And so then, therefore, it's far less likely to need to be doing tests and screening. So that follows. That is completely logical. And so it doesn't mean across the board that will be the common experience, regardless of getting the vaccine. So we have to be careful what we say so that people can understand the full scientific context.
Mm-hmm. We're getting a question here on our text line about the flu season. I know some other countries were relieved that we didn't face the twindemic that people were worried about. But how have we looked here in the Bahamas? Did we have flu at all, or all this hand washing has reduced our cold and flu season dramatically?
Well, the flu is transmitted in the same way as COVID-19, basically droplets and contact with surfaces and hands. And so it appears that COVID-19 has helped to reduce flu circulating.
Simple as that. Okay. Yep. Yeah, definitely. Great. What else would you say to folks who are right now just so exhausted about all of this? And as you said, it's not going anywhere. It's going to be a while. What do they need to keep in mind as we go forward, facing another few months of this, at least?
I say be optimistic that if we have learned to live with this and reduce our risk of getting COVID personally, to take care of our own health and the health of our loved ones and control it in country, that it should be better than last year. And we should be hopeful, because something that was quite huge and monumental happened, which is that COVID-19 became something that we could vaccinate against. And so that should mean that when we have sufficient vaccinations and immunity, it should be a better situation. But the truth of the matter is, it doesn't happen at the drop of the hat the minute the vaccines get here. The next day, it isn't that that the COVID-19 situation is going to be perfectly solved. It's going to take time for uptake of vaccines, but be optimistic and don't get tired. It will look better. It won't always be like this, and we're going to have to learn to live with it. Mm-hmm. And if we truly are going to be a country that has learned to live with it and solve the problem, I heard your caller talking about which country has cracked the code. Well, the truth of the matter is, all countries are going to be in a situation where they're applying control measures and prevention measures, and there's a spectrum of that. And at times, there will call for an increase in precautions. And we're seeing that in countries that are or have had third waves. Mm-hmm. And there will be precautions and there would be relaxation of precautions. And that is how you learn to live with COVID-19. There are countries that have done exceedingly well, but in situations where there was a problem, they recognized there was a problem early and put in place measures to stop spread. And that is how you have to look at this.
The vaccine
and learn our lessons from what we've already been through. Mm-hmm.
The vaccine is supposed to be in country next week sometime. Is there a plan, a strategy? You already have persons lined up to take the vaccine, or will it be a wait and see?
No, there's a vaccination plan in place with the COVAX committee, mm-hmm, and subcommittees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Dr. Forbes, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with us this morning. We really appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for taking the time again.
My pleasure. Always happy to be here with you. Have a good day. Take care, Mr. Strawn, Ms. Musgrove. Thank you for having me.
You as well. Dr. Nakia Forbes, the Director of Infectious Disease at the Bahamas Ministry of Health. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, changing gears, talking about all the exciting things going on with Alive and their post-paid plans. That's after the break. This is Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.
Your home is where your heart is, but it's more than just shelter. Your home is your workplace. Your home is school for your kids. Your home is even your happy place where you play. Get the best internet connection wherever you are with blazing fast speeds up to 300 megabits per second for as low as $99.99 and installation within 48 hours. Sign up for any of our fiber packages today and get a chance to win a free tablet in your second month. Call or WhatsApp 577-SHOP or 424-SHOP and sign up today. Conditions apply.
Hear that? That's the sound of your money working for you. Because at CFAO, we know you work hard for your money, so we make sure your money works hard for you. In 20 years as a leading investment firm, we've helped thousands of Bahamians grow their wealth and build a more stable future with savings plans, pensions, and wealth services to suit everyone. Whoever you are, whatever you do, we have financial solutions that will work hard for you. Visit or call us today to put your money to work. CFAO, seize your future. Today.
RBC and Visa bring you a benefit as unique as you to enjoy Disney Plus. Get 2 months of the all-new Disney Plus streaming subscription on us if you have an RBC Visa Platinum card. Learn more by visiting www.rbc.com/Caribbean/Disney. Reimagine new ways to bank better.
Stay a step ahead of technology with certainty and support from Custom Computers. Our know-how team is here to help you zero in on your next big tech purchase, finding solutions that take your productivity to the next level using only the best and most reliable brands. With 4 stores all across Nassau on East Bay, West Bay, Old Forte, and Palmdale, there's no stopping you from stepping up your tech. Reach out to us at 396-1100. Find trust in your tech. Count on Custom Computers.
Morning Blend Business.
The economy.
Finance.
Business.
Industry.
Government sector. Private sector.
Financial services.
Tourism.
Personal finance.
Investing advice.
Consumer issues. Consumer rights.
Trends and business opportunities.
Morning Blend Business. Following Morning Blend every weekday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
Roaming just got easier. Say hello to more with our new Liberty Prime plan. With more minutes, more texts, and more data to do the things you love right here at home and even when you travel. With the all-new Liberty Prime, Liberty Premium, and Liberty Elite, you've got one less worry. Roam again. Alive. Believe in best.
Believe in best.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
We are back here with Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Dwight Strong along with Pamela Musgrove. And change of gears, talking about Alive and their post-paid plans. We've got a lot of exciting things going on with that here. To talk about that, we are pleased to have Senior Product Developer Gaylene Rowe. Gaylene Rowe, welcome to Morning Blend.
Good morning. Thank you for having us this morning.
Good morning.
Dwight and Pamela.
Great talking
good
with you.
Good to be with you. Yes, Dwight, coming off of the heel of our Giftmas campaign, where we funneled 20K in giveaways to our subscribers through the list app, and our incredible CSR, where we, you know, with the continued support of our subscribers, we donated over 262K to local charities in our Together platform. And so I'm just here once again to say why Alive is the lifestyle brand for your audience.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm sure people are very aware. All right, so postpaid, tell us why someone should go postpaid as opposed to prepaid. This is with prepaid is how you started, but you've recently, well, not too long ago now, introduced postpaid. Why postpaid?
Well, what we have found, Dwight, is that postpaid is mostly preferred by business professionals. It's simply an option that you have. You can kind of set it and leave it. You don't have to worry about whether your bill is paid or whether you have to top up. So business professionals really prefer postpaid. And like I said, you can just set your account to auto pay, which we do have, you know, being an innovative company. Mm-hmm. You can auto pay in the app and it automatically pays your bill monthly. So for those who are busy on their schedule with their schedules and don't want to worry about having to worry about these things, mm-hmm. we can get that done for you.
That sounds good. Now, I know that you all also have auto pay with prepaid, so...
We do.
So give me another benefit to postpaid then, mm-hmm. if you have that.
Another benefit is that, and I think you're kind of getting to that. Mm-hmm. Another benefit is that we designed the offerings like we did for prepaid, which you're going to tell me, to benefit our customers. But mm-hmm. one of the things that we did recently was that when we introduced our new Liberty Prime plan, we introduced free roaming in the US and Canada for our postpaid customers. Oh, wow. And once again, like I have said, this is preferred by business professionals. Mm-hmm. So if you're traveling to these two countries, you don't have to worry about roaming and you do not have to worry about bill shock.
Nice. That is great.
And let me just put that into more context. We noticed that, you know, our competitor decided to offer, you know, minutes for the same service, but that can become convoluted. We designed it specifically, curated this service and experience for our customers. Mm-hmm. That's another reason why Alive postpaid.
Oh. All right. So you're already getting into it then. So tell us more about the plans, what's available, what your options are from the minimum up to the grandest plan you have.
So get that service that I just described for you. We're starting with our new plan, the Liberty Prime, mm-hmm. where you have 800 text, 800 talk, and 15 gigs of data for $74.99. Our Liberty Premium at $99.99, 1,000 talk, text, and 20 gigs of data. And the Liberty Elite, which is mostly preferred by business professionals, is $149.99. unlimited data, talk, and text. And like I said, these plans, you can use those services, your allotment, as though you're still home when you're in the U.S. and Canada.
Wow, that is fantastic. What's the response been like to all of these?
You know, it's been exciting because our customers who were already with us, we automatically migrated them to that service. Mm-hmm. So it was something that, you know, we wanted to give to our customers, and we did not charge them anything additional for it. We believe in the customer, true customer experience, mm-hmm. and the takeaway. That's one of our value propositions to our customers, mm-hmm. to always get better. And to always make the service and experience that is second to none.
Well, that's a great point there. So I don't know if you'll be able or if you will be willing to tell me this, but how many people decided to move from prepaid to postpaid when you launched that? Like, can you say percentage wise, maybe?
Well, I can't exactly tell you the percentage. You know, that's kind of sacred ground. Mm-hmm. But I can say that the response has been great to these new services. Well.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so if I'm an existing customer, what do I need to do to migrate, as you say, to postpaid? What happens?
Well, you can walk into one of our stores and you just fill out a contract to move from prepaid to postpaid and accept one of our offers, or you can bring your own device. That's for existing customers, mm-hmm. or, you know, customers from our competitors. If you want to port to us, and why wouldn't you want to? You can bring your own device if you don't want to go through the hassle of changing over a new device. And we will, you know, you sign a contract with us and bring the necessary documents, which is a government-issued ID. Mandatory is the NIB card. And you can port to one of these postpaid plans.
Sounds great. Now, you might have heard our previous segment talking about COVID. So if I don't want to come in, what can I do?
I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, with all of the restrictions, we still have the option of our concierge service where we are following the necessary guidelines, but we can meet you at your place of business, or you can sign up to meet us at one of our two stores that we have on our new booking app. And it's at www.bealive.com/concierge. And you can use our Coconut calendar to book an appointment with our concierge agent in New Providence. Or if you're on the other islands where we offer concierge, you can call one of the numbers and a concierge agent can assist you.
Well, that sounds pretty easy, pretty simple. All right. So I understand you have something special for our listeners today. Some giveaways. That's always fun. What are you giving away today?
Well, I'm giving away a drone and $100 Super Value gift certificate.
What?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay. And Pamela and I can't take part in this.
No. No, you can't.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. So a drone, good Lord, and $100 in a gift certificate for Super Value. Okay, that's some crazy.
What's the drone capability?
I think it's 15,000.
Wait, that's the. What does that mean? That's what?
I think feet.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I'm not an engineer or anything. Right. But
this will do what you need.
It would still be exciting to have,
that's
right?
Scary. Okay. All right.
But
so
of course we do have laws and rules against flying these things.
Yes, definitely.
High in the sky, so. Also consider that.
For goodness sake, definitely. Okay, so how are we going to do this? How are we going to give away these wonderful gifts?
So the first caller to tell me what was the name of the campaign when we launched our Liberty Prime plan can win a Super Value gift certificate.
Wow.
$100 Super Value gift certificate.
The first caller to give you the name of the campaign when you launched the Liberty Prime. Okay.
Yes.
Call in, folks, 323-6232. Call in with the answer to that, and you've got that gift certificate. You can also try 325-4316. 323-6232. All right. So we'll give them a couple minutes to get that together. And so let's talk about some other things going on in the live right now, although we got a call. Yeah, let's see if this person has it. Good morning, caller. Do you have an answer to the question?
Hello, yes. Is it Freedom?
No.
Oh, boy.
Unfortunately.
Right, oh, boy. Try again. 323-6232.
And while they're calling in, mm-hmm. let me just say that on top of our already competitive prices, through Concierge, you can get an additional $100 off when you port to Alive.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we're going to give the first 100 persons that use the booking app and port to Alive a $25 Amazon gift card.
Okay. Lots mm-hmm. throwing it all out there today. Okay, that's beautiful stuff. 323-6232, 325-4316. Let's see if this caller has the answer. Good morning, caller. Say it again.
Is it Liberty?
No, unfortunately. It's the campaign name that we're looking for.
Campaign name. All right. Keep trying. 323-6232. We've got another one here. Let's take this one. Good morning. Good morning, caller. You are on the air. Do you have an answer to the question this morning?
Is it Jet Prime?
Is that it?
No, Gailey? No, it's not Get Prime. Get Prime was a slogan that we used, but because you're probably going to be the one that's closest, I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
It was Roam Again.
Oh.
It was the campaign name was Roam Again, but we will give it to you for Get Prime. That was the slogan that we used.
Yep. All right.
Thank you.
Caller, stay on the line. We'll get your information and we'll give that to Alive so they can tell you what you need to do. Okay, so that's one down. Now we've got the big drone to give away.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
So
this is going to be
if the caller can name for me three islands where we offer concierge services, they will get the drone.
Wow.
Well, I just told you what the concierge website page is, so... Mm-hmm. Maybe you could just go
pretty,
to the page and tell us where we offer the services.
Easy. All right. So call this line, 325-4316. 325-4316. Name three islands that Alive offers the concierge services. And you'll win this drone, 325-4316. You can also call into the other line now, 323-6232 as well. All right. Boy, here we go. The phone lines are lit up. Let's see if anybody has the answer. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
Is the answer Abaco, Exuma, and Grand Bahama?
That is correct.
Oh, wow. Okay. There you go.
Are you Cable Bahamas employee?
Possibly.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll let Alive deal with that on their own. We have to sort that one out. Okay, so we've got a winner there. We'll get your information, and then we'll get that to the folks at Alive. Congratulations to our winners. And Gaylene, Roy, making some people very, very, very happy today. That's great stuff. Great way to start a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Two great prizes there.
Yep.
And I'm sure they're going to enjoy that quite a lot.
There's one thing I also want to share in the spirit of community, because, you know, we're all about community. Mm-hmm. One of the things your audience may have missed, Dwight, is if you go to our website, we have on our homepage a button that says buy plan and top up.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a plan and top up for anyone that is an Alive subscriber. And you don't even have to be an Alive customer to do that.
Wow.
So in the spirit of giving and community, I just wanted everybody to know if there's something you want to do for somebody, mm-hmm. buy them a top-up or a plan.
That's a great gift mm-hmm. as well.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yes.
That will put a smile on people's faces. That sounds great. All right, Gaylene, a lot of exciting things happening with Alive. Thank you so much for being here and sharing that with us. We appreciate it. Again, congratulations to our winners today with the trivia questions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and be back. This is Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Stay with us.
Are you ready to break up with your car? Easy Car Sales invites you to fall in love with an electric vehicle. Ditch the gas pump, the expensive mechanics. Feel the freedom, the power. Visit easy242.com and make a date to test drive an electric vehicle today. Get into a better relationship. Find your perfect match at Easy Car Sales and drive electric happily ever after.
Looking for plenty food and you're on a budget?
We are great.
Stop into Whitney's and grab our latest bundle. Introducing the Biggie Bag. With the new Biggie Bag, you get a Dave single, junior fries, regular drink, and four-piece nuggets for only $7.25, fat inclusive. Add an apple pie for just $1 more. Now that's a deal.
Motor and also hook up, eh?
It's the best on these streets. Available at all locations. Restrictions apply. Whitney's, different inside and out.
With the outbreak of COVID-19, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we remain committed to our customers during this global pandemic. Our Nassau and Freeport branches are open to assist you remotely, Monday to Friday, between 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Call 397-2100 or email info@jsjohnson.com. Be safe, Bahamas. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day. It's the start of the start of a new way.
We're back here with Morning Blend on Guardian Radio 96.9. Dwight Strong along with Pamela Musgrove. Interesting show so far. And we said so far because there's more. There's Morning Blend business. Our official start coming up next here on Guardian Radio 96.9. And stay tuned for that. Our first guest scheduled to be the Financial Secretary, Marlon Johnson. We'll tell you all about that coming up after the break. So stay with us. Morning Blend continues after the news.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
Wake up, it's a new day. Wake up, it's a new day.
Welcome, welcome back if you've been listening, but welcome to Morning Blend Business here on Guardian Radio 96.9. Again, I'm Dwight Strawn, and Pam Musgrove is sticking around for us today. And this is a new addition to Morning Blend, and every day we're going to delve deeper into matters that impact all of us, the economy, industry, business in the private sector and the public sector, your personal finances and money management, business trends and opportunities, and we'll have news and analysis on all and any developments. We're going to be here every day from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. with this expansion and addition of the Mothership Morning Blend. Morning Blend program that you've come to enjoy, I hope, and love for the past 9 years. Mm-hmm. Now, at this point so far, this is the plan. Each day of the show, we're going to have a particular theme. So Mondays, we're normally going to examine government or public sector issues. Mm-hmm. Tuesdays, we're going to focus on the private sector. Wednesday, we'll examine a hot button issue for that week, anything hot that's going on in the business world. Or we're going to feature profiles of businesses as well. Thursdays, we'll focus mainly on personal financial matters. And Fridays, we'll look at new concepts or opportunities. Or we'll feature roundtables with experts in various financial fields. So that's the plan for now. That may evolve, but that is where we're going so far with Morning Blend Business. And there's definitely a lot to talk about. People have been saying that for a long time, that the business section is where it's at in any paper in this country. That's where you find the real news and the real surprising developments. Yep. And so we're going to delve deeper into all of that in this hour dedicated. A dedicated hour of Morning Blend for that. So as it is a Monday, we're going to look at the government and public sector, and we're very pleased to have as our very first guest, Acting Financial Secretary Marlon Johnson. He'll be joining us in just a bit. But first, we've got Morning Blend Business Report that has a new home in this 9 o'clock hour. So let's get into it with the Morning Business Report brought to you by CFAL. And in the Morning Business Report, the government is moving ahead with acquiring the land to expand the North Eleuther International Airport through compulsory acquisition. Director of Aviation Algernon Cargill telling Guardian Business that this is required by law as the government plans to compensate the Harbour Island commonage for that land. Cargill says the government hopes there can eventually be some sort of trade-off for the use of the commonage's land. But he said those negotiations will come after the airport is constructed. He says they're now in the final stages of the acquisition, and the commonage has been advised by the government. He says, quote, when the acquisition is completed, we can move ahead with the construction of the airport and use the funding we have already arranged for this purpose. Under the Acquisition of Land Act, it does call for compensation. Cargill says the government will do that indeed. According to Cargill, the government will pay to the commonage whatever it determines is a fair amount through a valuation of the land. However, the commonage has been in negotiations with the government for many months over its imminent use of the land and hopes to negotiate terms for the use of the land that both parties agree to. Meanwhile, the Harbour Island Commonage Committee is hoping to settle its grievances over land occupation amicably with the government or through arbitration should the government fail to negotiate with the group, which is hoping to recover decades of compensation legally owed to it. The committee agreed Thursday during a virtual meeting to send a letter to the government laying out its final demands for compensation and reconciliation for years of the government's occupation of commonage land on Eleuthera or have the government face eviction from the land. According to the group, the North Eleuther Airport has sat on commonage land since 1959 to no benefit of the Harbour Island Commonage, a nonprofit organization with the goal of developing and providing prime land for all of its registered commoners. Read more about this in today's Guardian Business section. If the government would adjust the requirement for Nassauvians to produce a negative RT-PCR COVID-19 test and instead accept the less expensive rapid antigen test when they seek to travel to Exuma, the economy of that island would not be struggling as much as it is. That's according to Exuma Chamber of Commerce President Pedro Roll. Exuma has had just one confirmed case of COVID-19 since the start of the year, but remains under emergency order restrictions, including curfews and stipulations against indoor dining. Although the island's main employer and economic engine, Sandals Emerald Bay Resort, has recently opened, Roll says there are limited foreign visitors and the government should make it easier for New Providence residents to patronize the island. Read more in today's Guardian Business section. Overseas, the British economy suffering its biggest decline in more than 300 years in 2020 as the coronavirus pandemic closed shops and restaurants, devastated the travel industry, and curtailed manufacturing. The economy shrank 9.9% last year, more than twice the figure for 2009 at the height of the global financial crisis. the Office for National Statistics, making this announcement on Friday. The drop is the largest since 1709, when a cold spell known as the Great Frost devastated what was then a largely agricultural economy. The data comes as Britain's economy remains shackled by restrictions designed to combat COVID-19. A rebound in growth during the fourth quarter has been stifled by England's third lockdown, which has closed schools, restaurants, and non-essential shops since mid-December. Tough restrictions also remain in place in Northern Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. And parades canceled, bars closed, crowds suppressed. Mardi Gras joy is muted this year in New Orleans as authorities seek to stifle the coronavirus spread. And it's a blow to the tradition-bound city's party-loving soul. Mardi Gras, or Fat Tuesday, is the annual pre-Lenten bash celebrated along much of the Gulf Coast, with the biggest celebration in heavily Catholic New Orleans. Last year's revelry is now believed to be what contributed to an early surge that made Louisiana a southern COVID-19 hotspot. This year, bars are being forced to close during the final weekend of the season, which began Friday. Parades that generally start 12 days before the big day have been stifled. And Mayor LaToya Cantrell is promising a crackdown on large crowds. New Orleans Mardi Gras has had hard times before, though. The parade schedule was abbreviated and processions rolled past piles of flood debris in 2006, 6 months after levees gave way during Hurricane Katrina. And in 1979, parades were canceled or moved to the suburbs due to a police strike. Some locals making the best of it, though, decking their houses like parade floats. Closer to home in your market watch, recapping trading on the BISX from Friday, your market movers, Bank of the Bahamas, moving 364 shares, closing unchanged at 159. Bahamas First moving 50,000, closing up 10 cents to 225. CIBC First Caribbean Bank moving 100, closing unchanged at 1020. Commonwealth Bank moving 19,758, down 15 cents to 310. Doctors Hospital moving 1,700, up 4 cents to 680. Consolidated Water down, moving 1,403 shares, down 3 cents, closing at 266. Emira Incorporated up 5 cents, closing at 1024. The BISX All Share Index closing at 1,981.89, down 19.83. Recapping the week, the local market ended the week with 209,200 shares crossing the exchange, with 29 trades to accumulate a value of $859,593. The BISX All Share Index lost 55.4 points, or 2.746%. Year to date, the index is down 130.57 points, or 6.24%. The week's volume and value leader, Focal, moving 92,000 shares in two trades with a value of $347,250. That's your Market Watch, and that is your morning business report, brought to you by CFAL, growing wealth for future generations. And join CFAL for CFAL Talks tonight at 6:30 p.m. right here on Guardian Radio 96.9. And we're going to take a break. And coming up next, we talk with Financial Secretary Marlon Johnson. That's when Morning Blend Business returns here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
Hello, sir. Your credit card bill is due. Hello, sir. It's time for your monthly loan payment. Tired of creditors pounding at your door? Sign up for a debt consolidation loan from Fidelity Bank and consolidate your debt into one low monthly payment. What's more, you'll also earn interest on a built-in savings account. The pandemic has curbed many freedoms, but at Fidelity, our focus is to help regain your financial freedom. Visit a branch or speak to a Fidelity Bank at 356-7764. COVID safety measures in place at all branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Hear that? That's the sound of your money working for you. Because at CFAL, we know you work hard for your money, so we make sure your money works hard for you. In 20 years as a leading investment firm, we've helped thousands of Bahamians grow their wealth and build a more stable future with savings plans, pensions, and wealth services to suit everyone. Whoever you are, whatever you do, we have financial solutions that will work hard for you. Visit or call us today to put your money to work. CFAL, seize your future today.
When you get your child immunized, you are protecting him or her from diseases and also creating a safer community. It took many years for the Bahamas to get rid of infections such as polio, mumps, and measles. Keeping up with your child's immunization schedule so that they are fully protected can keep these diseases from coming back. The COVID-19 pandemic should not stop your child from getting immunized. Even if your child missed an appointment, they should continue with follow-up visits to catch up with their immunizations. Contact your nearest clinic or healthcare provider for more information or to make an appointment. Remember, immunizations are free at all government healthcare facilities. Prevent disease. Immunize, please.
This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Financial crisis on.
And we're back here with Morning Blend Business here on Guardian Radio 96.9. Dwight Strawn, along with my special guest co-host. She's here for this special hour. She says, don't get used to it. She won't be here with Morning Blend Business all the time. But once in a while, Pam, always a pleasure.
Pleasure
Thank
to
you
be
so
here.
Much.
Pleasure to be here.
All right, so we are very pleased to have as our first guest for this addition to Morning Blend Business, the acting financial secretary, Marlon Johnson. Good morning, Marlon. Great to have you with us, as always.
Good morning, Marlon. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good morning.
All right.
Good morning, Marlon.
So we want to talk about the economy, talk about how things are going, and we want you to start off by just laying it on the line for us. Telling us straight. We hear many, including yourself and the Minister of State for Finance, and we hear the Central Bank Governor trying to maintain what seems like a positive tone on what's going on. But is it just saving face? It just seems like there's so much going on and that we are in a dangerously precarious position. Is that where we are? Are we on the edge of a cliff here? At a point where we don't have much room to wiggle at all, we are in dire straits.
Well, I would first say that I don't know if anybody necessarily is trying to put a positive face on it. I think the public commentary from the Prime Minister, from the Minister of State, the Central Bank Governor, certainly for myself, has all spoken to the fact that we are in an unprecedented economic and crisis. There's nothing on recorded history that we've had that would approximate the kind of economic dislocation we're facing right now. The closest parallel probably would have been World War II, and obviously commerce was suspended because of the onset of that global war. But certainly, even this thing would have transcended that. So certainly, the fact that our economy would have contracted by 16% or more in 2020, there's nothing that compares to this. So yes, we are at a very, very precarious situation economically and then fiscally, but I don't think anybody tries to soft pedal that. But at the same time, I think as we look through it, we have been able to manage to keep some semblance of commercial activity going. Some of the sort of the core elements of the economy still moving along, even though the export sector has been shut down for the greater part of a year. So yes, the situation is dire. It isn't at the point where we're going to sort of collapse at any moment. But I think we all appreciate the seriousness of the situation. And I don't think anybody would seek to discount that at all.
Okay, so let's start from the basic. You mentioned that our economy contracted by about 16%. What is the current GDP right now? What is the number out there in terms mm-hmm. of the GDP number, the nominal and the real number?
I would have to refer back to the central banks, because I don't have that number specifically. But if you just do the math, we were probably at around $12.5 billion, and you contract 16%.
Right.
Then you know what I mean? Probably our economy is probably $1.5 billion or so, smaller than it was last year.
Okay. See,
so, yeah, that would be in sort of rough numbers. What we are is about 20% smaller as an economy than we would have been last year. And that probably is about $2 billion or so smaller as an economy than we were last year this particular time.
Right. The reason why I ask that is because if you go to the Bahamas government website, when they do the economic numbers, in 2018, the economy size was $12.4 billion.
Right.
So if you contract, like you said, that's about, you know, one point something billion you take off. And then I'll get back to the debt later. But then when you go to the website for the 2019 accounts, they are showing, it looks as if the numbers are revised. And they're showing that 2018, the economy size under the current GDP was 13.02 billion. So I'm not sure why the change occurred, which is the correct number, because it has implications. Because if the economy contracted by the 16% under the 12.4 billion, and you take the current debt, national debt of 9.3 billion, and you put over that, 11 point something billion or 10 point something billion dollars. You see where we, in terms of what the rating agency look at, in terms of our debt numbers, we are in a serious position and have little to no wiggle room. So I'm just trying to establish, like, what is the real number out there first?
So our most recent number, you'll find it on page 51 of our 2020 fiscal strategy report that was published in December.
Okay.
Well, we didn't have the benefit of the latest central bank numbers would have been published subsequent to that. But the numbers that we would have, if you go on that gives a general breakdown of where we are in terms of our GDP, our debt numbers, and the like. So, of course, we would have since then produced the first quarter report, the second quarter report, and then fiscal and so on, I might have a slight update on that. But the truth is that right now we believe we're going to end up the year with a debt-to-GDP ratio of around 85% debt-to-GDP. When we talk about wiggle room, the question is, what is it that you're asking? Do we have fiscal space to go and do new spending? No. But the question is, do we have room to take on more debt? Well, I guess you can argue that. I mean, if you look at where Barbados is, Jamaica is still higher from a debt-to-GDP ratio. The U.S. is way past that as far as the ratio, and many other countries. So there are options. But yes, it is a constrained environment. But no, it isn't at the point where we're not able to access the credit markets or we don't have any fiscal maneuverability whatsoever.
All right, so outline for us what the strategy is right now, what it is that you're trying to do, and how you're trying to keep, our heads above water there. What outline that for us.
So that's probably an apt analogy, is that right now we're in the middle of a crisis. And so if you want to use the medical analogy, you have the patient on the table. So what the government's Resilient Bahamas plan set out to do, and this is stated back in the budget, is to ensure that as much as possible, the government can do what it can to keep the economy from a full implosion. It recognizes that you're going to have a substantial contraction, and that bear involved, you're going to have substantial unemployment. So the government's strategy all along is to try to maintain some semblance of capital works, is to try to keep its employment numbers to where they are, to avoid any sort of, to the extent possible, any furloughs or any layoffs. And to keep its expenditure in the economy so as to help buttress the economy just through the sort of public sector spending, public sector wages going back into the economy and the like. As well, the government would have accelerated its social welfare spending, initially budgeted $72 million, we're over $100 million in that, in extended unemployment benefit programs, the food program, as well as substantial support for businesses. So small businesses would have benefited from the business continuity loan program to the tune of about $40 million since the onset of the pandemic. And the tax credit program, whereby businesses were able to keep back receipts to help them make payroll. That was, I think, around $40 million since the onset of the pandemic would have been spent with businesses just keeping hold of the VAT they collect and using that to offset their payroll expense to maintain private sector employment. So between that program and the business continuity program, we estimate around 14,000 private sector employees were paid for a number of months through those tax credit and business continuity programs. So those are the things. Direct support for persons who have been dislocated. Direct support for business community and the maintenance as much as possible of public sector employment. Because of course, if people get paid, they then spend that in the economy. And some measure of small scale capital works to maintain some, to keep the economy from full implosion until we can get back some traction in the commercial part of the economy.
Okay. So how much longer can we continue before we get to the point where tough decisions have to be made, where we say we have to cut back on this or have to eliminate that?
Well, I think, that's a really hard question to answer. So there's a number of things the government could do. The government can look at it and look for additional revenue measures to say, listen, the government can, and I'm not suggesting the government is contemplating this, but I'm just saying, if you're looking at the realm of possibilities, the government can look at additional revenue measures. The government can decide that, as other countries have done, to allow for some measure of salary cuts. The government can substantially scale back capital expenditure, and of course, with the implication that would have. So there are a number of things the government can do. But to your fundamental point, yes, there's only so much a government can do before it gets to a point where it truly is out of options. I don't think we're quite there yet. But as we looked at our hope and anticipation is by the time we get to the third quarter of the year, that certainly we have enough persons vaccinated in country and certainly in our source countries, the U.S. and Canada, that will allow us to get to some sort of normalcy and to start to reinflate the economy. You know, just obviously starting to come back, some sort of commercial activity, we being allowed to travel. And so as long as that is maintained, I feel confident that we could continue to cobble through this particular era. However, if it is so that, you know, we take a turn for the worse in COVID, you know, there is a substantial surge in the Bahamas or in our source markets, then, yeah, we will get to the point where we're going to have to look at some sort of critical decisions. And those, from an economic standpoint, we want to avoid because it becomes a vicious cycle. If you scale back government expenditure in an economy that's already curtailed, you're pulling out a lot of the consumption of the economy, and that makes a bad situation even worse in the broad economy. So that's the balancing act that we're trying to do.
So what happens if during the third quarter things don't turn around and we are where we at right now? What happened? What is the alternative that the government is planning on doing if things don't come back?
So we look through a number of scenarios, Tom. I mean, and so again, if it comes to that, then our advice to the government, you know, being policy advisors, would be you have to start looking at some of those things. You have to start looking back at substantial scale back in unemployment, furloughs, to sort of scale back the wage bill. You have to sort of put a full moratorium on all non-critical capital expenditure. You have to sort of look at potential revenue measures to augment the spend. And so those would be the kinds of things that you would have to sort of look at in the medium term, sort of near the medium term, if the situation deteriorates further.
Okay. You also mentioned to Dwight that at this point you're just trying to keep afloat, you know, using, and I think the government should be commended for the social initiatives that it is used to keep as much as possible to put monies in persons' pocket. But what are you doing simultaneously to try to grow this economy or even set the framework for growth on the other side of the pandemic? Because I think that is equally important for future survival.
Absolutely correct. So remember now, again, I get to switch caps now. I was talking as the financial secretary. I can talk a little bit as the co-chair.
We can't get anybody else, so we have to talk to you, right? I know we won't get the Minister of Finance, so we have to put it all to you.
Fortunately, I get to switch caps and talk a little bit as the co-chair of the ERC, the Economic Recovery Committee.
Excellent.
And that was our remit. What do you do now? Okay, you accept the fact that we're in a precarious situation. What do you do now to accelerate the recovery and to sort of go the economy out of this?
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you the short version. In the immediate term, what the ERC has done, and the Prime Minister would have engaged Nat Benaby to sort of have coordinated this effort in the short term, is to look at those ERC recommendations in particular the kinds of things that we could do to accelerate projects that are in the pipeline. So in the immediate term, what the government is doing is looking at the full matrix of domestic and foreign investment projects and just ensuring that there are no bureaucratic obstacles allowing them to come to fruition. So that's the most immediate step. You have a number of people who have either expressed interest or they're in the pipeline, so to speak, both foreign and domestic. And so the main thing is, listen, what could we do to accelerate that? That's one point. One. Secondly, on the domestic construction standpoint, you heard about the government's plan, the Carmichael Village plan, and I know there are several others in Providence, Grand Bahama, and potentially Abaco, where government could accelerate home construction, particularly for first-time home builders, to arrange of concessions and allowances, because the home market construction obviously adds boost to the economy, particularly in the construction trades, and also in particularly islands like Abaco and in Providence, where there's a housing shortage. That's the housing inventory. So those are some of the immediate things that are happening. Similarly, we're also looking at what are some of the investment obstacles. You would have seen in the ERC report, it laid out certain things that we believe there's room to open up the economy a little bit more, to allow for Bahamians, for example, to be able to get into the shared economy trade and how do we support that, expanding the support for small business development, which was already articulated in the government's budget, but making sure that those funds actually get in the hands of small businesses to keep them going. Transition now from business continuity loans to business recovery loans and grants for businesses. And, of course, expanding the government's small business grant program, which has been really successful. There was originally planned to do one rotation of it, and now we're on the third rotation of it, which is really providing up to grants of up to $5,000 for the micro businesses to allow them to either get started or get going. So those are the kinds of things that are happening in parallel. I just gave it a very shorthand version to say that there is substantial attention to ensuring that we emerge from this particular crisis in a way where the economy, where we're paying really close attention to the things that stop in commerce and making sure that the government is supporting commerce as much as possible.
I want to get back to something you touched on briefly when it comes to reforms. And everybody seems, both here locally and abroad, including the IMF, everybody's telling us we need to look at some drastic measures for reform, especially when it comes to taxation. Let's talk about that. And we're hearing, I don't know how to describe what we hear from the government, but it does seem like we're not really that willing to go down this road, but clearly the time has come for us to go there. Let's talk about that and what's needed and what the holdup is.
So the IMF has a position that it says, you know, the government ought to be considering things like income tax or certain more taxation. The government has a different perspective. The government has said, listen, it is the government's view that we ought to do as much as we can to accelerate economic growth coming out of this crisis, and to avoid what some term the lost decade after the 2008 crisis. After the 2008 crisis, collectively, and this is, I'm not making a partisan statement when I say this, because it, you know, transcends government, that we had a really sluggish no growth over the 10 years emerging from the 2008 crisis. So the question is, and our own estimate reported by the UBA is that if the government can get to the point where it's averages 2% real growth over the next decade, we can get out of this particular crunch without the need for additional taxes. So the government is of the view that as much as possible, to the extent that we can look at ways to unshackle Bahamian entrepreneurship, to the extent that we can have prudent major investments, both foreign and domestic, to try to seek that path to grow ourselves out of our economy and really get on a path of sustained growth in a targeted way. But even as we do that, the ERC made the recommendation, to your point, right, that it is time that we continue along this road of tax reform. Tax reform initially started in earnest with the move to value-added tax in 2015. And the ERC recommendation is that it is time that we continue that tax reform. We have to look and see how our business license fee regime, in the view of the Economic Recovery Committee, is transitioned into a corporate tax or certainly a gross profit tax. And sort of a transition there. And we also have to look at the tax, the relative tax burden. And we have to study this because there's sort of a narrative out there that, you know, our current tax regime is regressive. And I think many reasonable people hold that view. We have to really test that. and see how aggressive it is and really where it is disproportionately impacting. Because without the empiricism, then it's just me speculating. And once we determine that, I think that should help inform how do we...
is it really speculation? I mean, don't we have... Right?
It is the assumption. We assume it. And me too. I'm a part of that body that assumes.
So just one quick question. Let me do it for you. So we have... Do we have any white paper or any type of paper on taxation on the Bahamas and its implications if we choose an income tax or a corporate income tax?
No, any we don't have anything. No, we don't have any white paper on that. But that's one of the recommendations that came from the ERC was to have that particular study done in an earnest way.
So to look at the relative tax burden
and make a determination. Yeah.
So we still have a long way to go.
So Marlon, so you mean to tell me when we implemented VAT, there was no white paper done on taxation in the Bahamas. And when we increased VAT, there was nothing done in terms of a study on if we were to go the route of income taxes or corporate tax, the implication it would have on the country and the citizenry?
There were, to my understanding, from what I can see, yes, there was a significant study done funded by the IDB. I think that's publicly available on value-added tax and the recommendation to go
But not on taxes in general.
But not on taxes in general. And since that time, since I've been at the Ministry of Finance, there has been a study looking at the corporate side of the ledger on taxes. However, there's no general tax study. It is, and I support your view, the sentiment that it is something that ought to be done and something that we in the ministry are looking to do. Again, this is a recommendation that came out of the ERC that certainly the government support. And looking at that, we have to look at taxation broadly. Because we all have assumptions and presumptions around the relative burdens of taxes or whatnot, but it has not been empirically studied. So, no, it hasn't been done, but I would agree with your sentiment. That is something that needs to happen.
See, but that's the thing. That's something that needs to happen. This administration only has a year and some left in its term, and if it's changed during the next election, then that's we're further from getting where we need to get to determine what's the best tax system for the country.
Right. So what I can say is, again, you're right, and if the government were to change in the next election, a new government may come with a different approach. But what I can say now, it's certainly in the Ministry of Finance, is that we are taking the steps to ensure that we have that proper study done, because I think it is something that is long overdue.
All right, so you're saying that your view was different from the IMF and that we could get more of the investments in, but we're not seeing that right now either. So what are we going to do?
I don't say we're not seeing that now. Right. Let's look at where we were just pre-COVID even. Even after Dorian, in 2019, the economy is still at positive growth. And the year before that, we were close to 2%. We have a substantial number of projects in the pipeline now. I mean, and very few, if any of them, have really withdrawn. So there's a number of projects in the pipeline. There's a hotel facility that will open downtown probably in May.
But most of these are in the tourism sector, though, which is severely challenged.
It's challenged today. But again, if you everything that you look at it through the prism of COVID obviously means that you don't have any visitors today. But I don't think no reasonable person is going to assume that once we get past this, the tourists are going to stop coming. So I think we all anticipate. Now, that's just an argument for a standing part, but I'm saying that the projects in the pipeline, the investors, whether they're behaving or otherwise, still have confidence in these projects. I don't think that's ill-founded confidence. Mm-hmm. So I only say that to say that, no, we do have a very healthy pipeline of projects. The question for us collectively, and part of that is diversification, is what are the things we need to continue to do to ensure that we get those opportunities and we expand from it. Mm-hmm. One of the fascinating things, for example, that ordinary Bahamians can get involved in is a shared economy. We have thousands of properties listed on the vacation rental market sites that have been doing really good business prior to COVID. I mean, in places from Blair to Pinewood Gardens or whatnot, and listings on Airbnb. And it's a wonderful way to democratize the entire visitor experience. And of course, now we have, as we said in the ERC report, the government's ambition should be to increase the contribution of agriculture and fisheries from 1.5% of GDP up to 10% of GDP. Even in current terms, that's a 1.5% or the billion-dollar economy if we get to 10%. So there is a number of things that we believe can be done that can allow us to get to the real economic average of 2% per year, provided that we open the economy in a way that allows it to happen.
You know, normally what I tend to do is I have to look at other countries and see their success and like what they did to right. become successful and see how we can learn from them. Maybe not implement all of what they did, but learn from them. And I looked at Singapore, and barring that their type of governance is different because they have an authoritarian government system, but I looked at Singapore when they got their independence, and they were very poor and had some of the same challenges as us. But one of the things they did to attract investors is they found out that they had to create an environment that was safe, corruption-free, and low taxation. So they had a foundation. You had to be safe. You had to have corruption-free because there was a perception of corruption. So that's why they put in those stringent measures. I know we talk a lot about growth, but there are some fundamental things that need to be fixed on the ground level, the foundation, in order for us to have that growth. And I agree with Singapore, safe, corruption-free. But then also, we have a problem with energy.
Tom, if you look at Singapore, one of the first things they did wasn't that. One of the first things they did was swing the doors open to foreign investment.
Yeah, they did that
even as they were fixing the corruption and other problems. It wasn't either or. They did both, and they did both simultaneously.
But we swing our doors open, but we're not fixing the other problems. You see, because the same thing that foreign investors want to thrive, Bahamians need, domestic businesses need that to thrive as well. And one of the things is expensive, unreliable energy. We are not dealing with that problem. And so if a foreign investor finds it very expensive to operate in this country because of that, what do you think about the domestic investor?
So again, let me speak to them in turn. All right. Electricity is expensive in all small island states. Hawaii pays the same kilowatt hour as we do, even when you adjust for the surcharge that we have. You can look it up yourself. You look at Jamaica. Jamaica's a few pennies less than us. Barbados is around the same price. A small island state will always have expensive electricity, simply because of its lack of economies of scale. I'm not trying to excuse where we are, because you would see in the corporation took great steps to reduce, for instance, its surcharge down to 10.5 cents now for the next 24 months through a hedge facility to try to bring the cost down. But ours is not only a small island state. We're an archipelago. If you look at other archipelagos around the world and see what they charge, you will see that the cost of electricity is generally the same that we charge here. We're not more expensive given our size and cost dynamics than other persons. Now, the reliability issue is a very good point. To fix the reliability issue, we have to recognize that this isn't a decade in the making. This is 5 decades in the making, because we've underinvested in the electricity plant over the years for whatever set of reasons. So in order to fix that, BPL, going back to the last administration, recognized that it needed to have a substantial injection of money through a rate reduction bond. It has brought that forward several times, and we've run into several hiccups, most recently Dorian, and now COVID to delay it. Once that is done, they will get in hand $300 million or so that they will need in order to fully rehabilitate their plant. Because even though they would have installed, for example, new generators, it's still running on the old transmission and distribution system, which is 50 years old in places. So those things are being addressed, but it will take some time to get that.
I got to ask you this. In response to Pam, though, you talked about swinging the door open. You talked about Singapore swinging the door open to foreign investment. But what are we doing here other than tourism and maybe oil? You mentioned diversification, but are we really seeking that? Where are the examples of us seeking that?
Right. So, capital follows opportunity. So we have talked diversification since I was a little boy. The challenge that we have is, if we want to look at diversification, and again, I go back to what the ERC said. The ERC gave very specific recommendations around this so that we could appreciate what we mean when we say diversification. The first thing is that we have a destination that people want to come to. So if we want to diversify, the question is, how do we diversify at the destination of choice? Because if we want to diversify, we want to get into things like large-scale manufacturing and large-scale agriculture. Our disconomies of scale, right, may not allow for that, may not allow for capital, whether it's domestic or foreign capital, to come into those places. Mm. So the first thing we have to do is look at where are the places that we can diversify and make sure that we have the right kind of incentives to bring them there. But generally speaking, when people, Bahamians or foreigners, look to invest, that tells you where they believe opportunities are. And so, and that tells the story. So what we have said, for instance, is that diversification into agriculture and fisheries makes sense, especially fisheries, mm-hmm. which is a underlying one. But in order to do so, we have to define which agricultural and fishery products we will focus on. And we also then have to articulate that and articulate the incentive strategies that focus in on those things.
And also start to educate our young people so they can get...
But educating and also providing the capital support in those specific areas so that it's specific. Mm-hmm. The other thing that needs to happen, and the Ministry of Agriculture is working on it now, is that is one thing to grow it, but growing it is only a part of the problem. And so how are you going to distribute it? How are you going to get it from its source market, whether it's Acklands or Inagua, wherever you're growing it, to New Providence in an efficient way? So the packing out system has to be addressed. And again, the Ministry of Agriculture is looking how they can transition that out in a different way to make that something that actually has some private sector discipline around it to make it happen, because you have to grow it, you have to ship it, you have to package it, market it, distribute it. And so that entire ecosystem now needs to be supported.
Yeah.
So, and you have to do it in a way where at the end of the day, Bahamians want Bahamian products, but then they have to be cost effective as well. So it really is the focus support around that is going to be critical.
All right, we got to take a break. We have a lot more questions for you, Marlon Johnson. So stick around with us. This is Morning Blend Business here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
Okay.
With the outbreak of COVID-19, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we remain committed to our customers during this global pandemic. Our Nassau and Freeport branches are open to assist you remotely, Monday to Friday, between 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Call 397-2100 or email info@jsjohnson.com. Be safe, Bahamas. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
The novel coronavirus disease, now called COVID-19, is a new strain of coronavirus that has not infected humans before. Symptoms include cough, fever, sore throat, breathing problems, and shortness of breath. After a person has been exposed to COVID-19, symptoms can appear between 2 to 14 days later. Severe cases can lead to pneumonia, severe respiratory syndrome, kidney failure, or even death. The virus is transmitted after being in close contact with an infected person. To prevent the spread of a respiratory illness like COVID-19, wash your hands for at least 20 seconds with soap and water. Rinse, then dry. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, or mouth unnecessarily, especially if your hands are not washed. Cover your mouth and nose with your inner elbow or tissue when you cough or sneeze. Avoid close contact with persons who are infected or have symptoms such as coughing or sneezing. Clean and disinfect surfaces at home and at work. There are no medications to treat the coronavirus. Practice preventative measures to ensure that you and your family are safe.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio. And at 9:49, your final look at weather for this morning. A quick look. We've got a persistent high-pressure ridge that will continue to support mostly dry and stable conditions with brisk winds across the area today. Beachgoers should exercise caution due to the high risk of rip currents at East and South Coast beaches. Today, we're looking at partly to mostly sunny, breezy, and very warm conditions with a chance of a few passing showers, mostly fair and a bit breezy tonight. Daytime high temperatures getting up to 84 Fahrenheit, 29 Celsius. Overnight lows tonight getting down to about 75 Fahrenheit, 24 Celsius. Your extended outlook calling for a high pressure to remain across the area but gradually shift towards the east. Tuesday, ahead of a cold front, expected to reach just north of the area and become stationary. Not expecting temperatures to change much, but rain chances might go up a bit. Not expecting any cooler temperatures until at least the weekend. That's your morning blend. Final look at weather. With Morning Blend Business, Dwight Strawn along with Pamela Musgrove. We are talking with Marlon Johnson, the financial secretary, and talking about money, talking about just where we are with the economy right now. And the most recent data we've seen, the VAT collections were down, the duties were down, everything down, it seemed. And it is scary. It's scary, Marlon Johnson. Are we seeing any improvement since that last report? Are we likely to see anything? What do you make of that?
First of all, yes, it is pretty scary, but nothing unexpected. Again, you know, one of the things I sort of chuckle at, to be quite honest, is to see the sort of media reports on the budget report. The budget report is very much in line with where the government said it would be. You know, the government projected a $1.3 billion deficit for the full year, and we were at $700 million and some for the first half. When our first half revenues is generally, you know, 43, 44% of a full year revenue in any given year. So, yes, it is stark, but it isn't unexpected. And I think the government planned what it's seen, and very much is in line with what we expected. So I just want to make that clear. Even though it is, use your word, scary, it is not unexpected. What we have been seeing, and the minister spoke to this, is certainly from the period of about November onward, is that revenue started to track much more in line with where we wanted budget. The first quarter was booby because we had the full shutdown in August. That threw us behind. And so our first quarter expectation was like $68 million off of where we thought we would be in revenue, largely because of the significant shutdown due to COVID. But certainly since November onward, we've been tracking on budget for as far as revenue is concerned and slightly higher. Now, to put that in context, that is still, you know, up to 40% lower than where we were last year. But the fact that we are now trending much closer to budget during this third quarter is a sign that there is economic activity going on the domestic side. And that it's holding its own. As you said, though, and I don't want to make light of it or make it sound as though I'm cheerleading it, the situation remains very precarious, not so much for where we are, but because of the fact that the COVID still has a great level of uncertainty. We could see a COVID spike here that shuts the domestic economy down or constricts it further. We could see a reversal of the current downward trend in the U.S. or Canada. The concern for me here in the Ministry of Finance is the high degree of uncertainty because of COVID. Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to two points you mentioned earlier about swinging the door open. And to that point, we can swing the door open as much as we want to. If we don't try to get to fix these underlying infrastructure challenges that we have, then we will not get the cream of the crop in terms of foreign investment. And you also mentioned about BPL borrowing the $300 million. And that's all fine and good. But if we borrow this money and we keep in the same management structure that resulted in BPL getting in the state that it's in, over these years, then we're going to continue to have challenges. So unless the government look to changing that, where it removes management control and board board control from the government and put it in mm-hmm. some independent body, then we right. are, in essence, in my view, we are taking mm-hmm. good money and we're throwing it after bad in terms of that hole that we will go in as it relates to BPL.
Right.
I want so, to yeah, ask, sorry.
Let me speak to those 2 points. Mm-hmm. On BPL, no, I think there's agreement. I hope you all will go take a look at the ERC summary report, because that was a point made to government as far as state-owned enterprises. State-owned enterprises need to be freed up from the direct influence of politics. That's a recommendation that the ERC made.
And so people have been saying that for decades.
And one of the things, too, again, if you look at, I hope one session you do on the new bills that have just went to Parliament, the Public Financial Management Bill will strengthen, if passed by Parliament, the requirements of these state-owned enterprises to report. The procurement bill will make it transparent and require them to publish their procurement and contracting activities. So to your point about some of the structural things to address the threat of corruption, the four bills that the government is seeking to debate shortly around procurement, public debt management, public fiscal management, and the statistics bill is specifically geared up and looking at some of those structural issues that creates the lack of transparency and accountability that has been sort of endemic in the Bahamas.
Right. I think that the challenge with that, though, is enforcement. See, if it's a private company, the government tend to be very well in enforcing the law as related to a private company. But when it's its own,
right.
they shove it on the side and they're casual with it. So I think the problem
So one of the things that helps, first of all, you got to fix what you can fix.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is that the laws didn't require or do not require a lot of these state-owned enterprises and government to be extremely transparent. Once the law is there now, for instance, on the publication of contracts under the procurement bill, the press, civil society, the opposition, whomever it may be at the time, can now come to government and say, you are required to do X, Y, Z. And like the fiscal responsibility bill that was passed, that requires the government to publish a fiscal strategy report and create other things that have made it's more transparent. The quarterly reports increase a different level of transparency. That will be enshrined in the law. So, again, it is iterative, but these things, once they get in and they start to become part of the public's expectations, it does create a different level of expectation on governments that will help reinforce some of the accountability requirements.
Let me ask you a question.
As they are enforced, but getting the information in the public is a great step forward in that whole enterprise.
Okay, does the law require the Auditor General to table audited reports for public corporation on an annual basis?
No, it does not now, no.
No, so there's no requirement for audits to be done for these public corporations on an annual basis?
Each of them, what has happened is each of them had their own specific audit requirement. But mm-hmm. the timeline for requirement, what happens if they don't publish all of these things were never quite spelled out. So the new, again, I invite you to read it, the new Public Financial Management Bill will set out certain parameters and requirements for publication so that if it doesn't happen, you in the media, the opposition civil society can now ask the government, why aren't these things happening? Because the laws have been shaped to require and facilitate it. So in other words, it creates another mechanism for accountability.
Okay.
And that has been the issue.
All right. Speaking of the Auditor General, I think it was a report showing that there's so much money outstanding from
taxes.
Hotels, taxes. Real property taxes. What this seems like low-hanging fruit. What are we going to do about this? Are we going after this? Can we?
Yes. I mean, we have a team now that, again, recognizing the Auditor General report was right on the money. But it isn't something that I certainly didn't know as Financial Secretary. And we had started looking at that. We had a team, or we have a team that was engaged specifically go after real property tax, and they really were entrenched last year, and they would have done, I think, somewhere around $30 million in collections. And there are a number of persons in court now, a number of court cases that go into. The challenge we have is once you get to the point where you have to take it to court, that can take years. We've had one case that's been in the court for now 6 years plus, but that's going after just actioning to take the property in order to fulfill it. So part of it is actually going after those persons, and the ministers commented and will comment on that a little bit more. I don't want to take too much on that, but there's a recognition you have to do that. But we also have to look at what mechanisms we can put in the law, short of taking somebody's property, that will encourage them to pay. Because once you get into that process, that can be a very long, driving process. And the debtors know that.
Yeah.
So that's been a part of the challenge as well.
Right.
And some of those major debts, I just want to finally say, are for properties where, in the case of family island properties owned by foreigners, there's a challenge in even getting to the actual beneficial owner, because the person who owned the property might have died, their state is not aware of the property. So there's a number of things we have to clean up to in the law in order for us to essentially take back those properties in cases where people haven't paid.
Running out of time, can you give us a preview of what we can expect in the mid-year budget? What can we look forward to that?
So it would be what persons have seen in the second Q2 report. We are slightly behind where we thought we would be in the budget. That's really occasioned by the first quarter challenge of the shutdown. Last few months have been trending a little bit better, but it's still a very precarious situation we had, and we're hopeful that the vaccination programs in our source markets will get us out of this particular situation, but we remain very cautious in our projections because of the uncertainty of COVID.
Mm-hmm. So much more we could have talked about, Marlon Johnson. Hopefully we'll have you again very soon. Thank you so much for talking with us this morning.
I'll be able to come back so we can talk some more.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
And unfortunately, thank you, Marlon. Appreciate it. And unfortunately, we couldn't get any calls. But next time we have him, we promise we will do that. Pamela, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Dwight. Have a blessed week, Bahamas.
On this first Morning Blend Business, we'll be back tomorrow morning with more on business, industry, finance, the economy, and the country. Hope you will join us for that, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on Guardian Radio, following Morning Blend, 6:15 to 9 a.m. here on Guardian Radio. Stay tuned for On the Clock with Aaron Green coming up next. I'm Dwight Strawn. Have a great day, everybody.